Start Getting Real. A Moldau Zusha story, written by Azure Waxwing and read by Calcaria. This story features the pairing Lan Wanxi, Wei Wuxian, has been rated for audiences teen and up and has been tagged No Archive Warnings Apply. Additional tags for Alternate Universe, Modern with Magic, Reality TV, POV Outsider, Golden Core Reveal, Appropriate Use of Gusu Lan Silencing Spell, Getting Together. Summary. Did you break the ward to come in? Lan Wanxi asks, point blank. He has his sword out and pointed at Wei Wuxian, no bothering with niceties like, Hello, I'm Lan Wanxi, and you are? Wei Wuxian eyes the sword, but doesn't react. He keeps lazing back on the roof, casually drinking his wine, as if this is the usual way he meets people. And maybe it is. I don't know your life, Wei Wuxian. Lan Wanxi and Wei Wuxian meet on season 8 of The Cultivation World. Ouyang Zichen writes the recaps. Reader's note. I am doing my best. Many thanks to Lunatique for providing pronunciation guide. But I am sure my pronunciations are still terrible. I am so sorry. Episode 1. Lan Argoga versus the Talisman. Welcome back, friends. I'm Ouyang Zichen, your friendly recapper, and this is the 8th season of The Cultivation World. What will Mango TV have in store for us this season? And can the show top that threesome reveal in last season's final episode? I can't imagine how it could, but this show has surprised me before. Day 1, 5:37 a.m., somewhere in the Wudang Mountains. A shot of high peaks, silhouetted against the first pink edges of dawn. We get the standard intro voiceover as the rising sun slowly reveals a red watchtower buried in the deep green of the woods. 7 cultivators, chosen to work together at a traditional sect watchtower. They will face 6 weeks without modern conveniences, night hunts without access to cultivation technology, and blah, blah, blah. By the 8th season, we all know the drill. Time to meet this season's cultivators. First to arrive, the timestamp says 5:48, so we've either got a keener or an early riser, or maybe both, is Lan Wanxi. He's 29, from Suzhou, and is an associate professor at Changshu Institute of Cultivation. Yes, he's the younger brother of last season's Lan Xichen, and yes, they could basically be twins, which means Lan Wanxi is hot. Very hot. I mean, he's actually kind of icy-seeming, but you know what I mean. Anyway, he's already dressed in delicate blue robes, with his long hair pulled back in a braid and a slender white cloud-patterned ribbon tied around his forehead. Since the inside of the watchtower is still dark when he goes in, he holds up a handful of glowing spiritual energy to light his way. I hereby dub him Han Guanzhen. I hope that my participation in the show can educate viewers about the benefits of a traditional cultivation practice, he says, laying out a gutsin and a sword in the room he's chosen. I find that musical cultivation, in particular, has become something of a lost art. Then he sits down on the floor and begins to meditate. We can safely assume Lan Wanxi is not one of those people who comes on this show hoping for a paid vacation. The next two cultivators arrive at the same time. First is Wen Qing, from Chongqing, who specializes in medical cultivation. She flashes a set of ominous-looking silver needles and grins at the camera. She's gorgeous, with a sharp little angled bob and pointy chin and huge eyes. I run a clinic in Chongqing, she says. It's very urban. We get a lot of key deviations, big city curses, patients who aren't sure if the nightmares are from overwork or a haunting. I thought this might be a chance to expand my skills. The other arrival is Luo Qingyang, 34, from Xueqiasheng, assistant bureau chief at the Hebei Bureau of Cultivation. She was a disciple with the Lan Linxing when she was young, she says, but she's been unaffiliated for the last decade. I've got a kid now, she says, shrugging. I don't want Mian Mian exposed to that sort of bullshit, you know? Wow, there's a story there. I mean, obviously there's a story there, but we don't get anything more than that. And anyone who remembers Jin Tushen from season 3 can probably guess the sort of bullshit she's talking about, though. Anyway, she's here because she wants to show you that you don't need to be a disciple at one of the big sects to make it in a cultivation career. Also, Mian Mian wanted to see her mother on television. Wen Qing and Luo Qingyang join Lan Wanxi inside. He's acquainted with Luo Qingyang already, The cultivation community is really small, as I realize every time I go and cultivate, and all three of them seem competent and no-nonsense. I expect they'll all get along well. Next to arrive is Lan Xingyi, again, a distant cousin of Lan Wanzi's, who's 21, from Shanghai, and a student at Fudan University. He makes his entrance by doing a backflip off his sword, and seems disappointed when he realizes no one's around to see it. "Yeah, I'm here to learn," he says. He has long hair pulled up in a messy bun, and a curve to his mouth that makes him seem like he's constantly on the verge of making a snarky comment. "My shifu says I rely on too much on cultivation technology, you know? That I need to get back to basics." He leans in close to the camera. "I mean, don't tell shifu I said this, but he's totally right. Last time my phone died, I tried to draw a transportation array without Wu De Zuzhen and got stuck in a loop between my house and West Nanjing Road Station for 3 days. He heads inside, where it becomes immediately apparent that he is a Han Guansun fanboy. He corners Wen Xing and Luo Qingyang in the storeroom, where they're cataloging the Watchtower's store of supplies, everything from cinnabar to rice, and starts to tell them stories about how great Lan Xingbei is! You guys, he's really amazing! Luo Qingyang and Wen Qing are both struggling to keep from laughing at his enthusiasm, but when the camera cuts to Lan Wanxi in the traditional kitchen, he has the fire going in the pit stove and is cooking what appears to be a veggie stir fry in one wok and rice in the other. Everything looks immaculate, and I can practically smell the food through the screen, so it seems like Lan Xingyi might know what he's talking about. Lunch is a quiet affair. Lan Wanxi follows the traditional Gusu Lan rule of silence while eating, and the others seem to agree to follow suit. And it's not until a few hours later that we get our next arrival. This season's youngest cultivator, Jing Ling, 18. From Qingdao. He was just a baby, well, a kid at least, when Luo Qingyang left the Laling Qing sect, so we'll assume he wasn't the cause of any of the bullshit, but he seems to have a typical Qing attitude. "This place is so old and creepy, and this room is really small," he says, looking with sulky displeasure at the sparsely furnished room he's been assigned. "Yes, Qin Ling, it is old. That's the point of all this." He runs a finger over the low table beside the bed and sneers at the dust he scrapes off. "This watchtower was abandoned 314 years ago. That's oddly specific. And I don't think anyone's dusted it since then. Gross." His motivations for coming on the show remain a mystery, since he doesn't seem interested in explaining himself, but his unpacking reveals that he's brought approximately 400 spirit nets with him. At least those might be useful. "So, you know how every year there's that one cultivator on this show who you wouldn't want to get stuck with for 6 minutes, let alone 6 weeks? Well, this season, I'm betting that cultivator is Su Shi, age 27, from Wuxi, who works in cultivation processes at Industrial Design Company, whatever that means. It's not even that he does anything objectionable when he arrives, really. It's just a vibe I get from him." "I think you'll find we practice a similar style of musical cultivation," he says, pompous, when he greets Lan Wanxi. It seems like Su Shi knows Lan Wanxi, but not vice versa. Also, he stares at Lan Wanxi, who's in response to this is a flat, with an expression that makes me think he's either jealous of Lan Wanxi or has a crush on him. Maybe both. Later, while he unpacks his own gutsun, Su Shi talks about his experience attending Cloud Recesses, the Gusu Lan Cultivation Academy, in his youth. "They have a reputation for excellence, but I found the instruction uninspiring," he says. "I have developed my own techniques, which I think go beyond what the Gusu Lan traditions have to offer. One of my reasons for coming here is to share that innovation with the world." It's similar to the sentiment expressed by Luo Qingyang, so why does it seem so much more annoying when Su Shi says it? By nightfall, the final cultivator still hasn't arrived, so Han Guansun puts up the wards at the watchtower gates, and everyone heads to bed. Day 1, 10:57 p.m., outside the watchtower gates. Arriving with the moonlight is Wei Wuxian, 28, from Wuhan, head instructor at Yunmang Tiang Archery School. "It's a long way up from the bus stop," he says, as if that explains why he's late. He doesn't seem to have a sword with him, so maybe it actually does explain something? Weird. Like Lan Wanxi, he's very hot, but with a totally different vibe. Ripped jeans, hoodie, army boots, casually disheveled. His hair is scraped back into a short ponytail, revealing a single onyx stud in one ear. Okay, so let's get this out of the way now, since everyone is thinking it. Yes, this is that Wei Wuxian, the subject of all those rumors swirling in the cultivation community. I've heard a lot of different things, but the gist of it is that after that enormous fire at Lotus Pier, which was allegedly arson, involving a certain cultivation clan with ties to organized crime, he disappeared for a while, and a lot of people thought he was dead. Then he reappeared about a year ago, and after that, a certain cultivation clan got a lot quieter, and everyone started saying that Wei Wuxian of the Yunmanxiang was too friendly with the dead. More specifically, people say he cultivates with resentful energy. He discovers the ward on the gate. Wards are made to be broken, he mutters, and pulls out a talisman from the pocket of his hoodie. It produces a handful of sparkly butterflies that somehow temporarily disperse the ward, allowing him to slip through. I'm just gonna screenshot that talisman for future use. Hold on. I guess I shouldn't go in if everyone's sleeping, Wei Wuxian says. I've been told I can be kind of loud. And honestly, I've slept in way worse places than a roof beneath a full moon. He leaps up to the roof of one of the outbuildings and settles in on the tiles, producing a pot of wine out of his hoodie pocket. It must be a Chankin pocket, because that hoodie is skin tight. A time-lapse montage shows him drinking, and then drinking more, and then more again. A second pot of wine comes out, then he digs around in the pocket and starts to pull out other stuff, which mostly seems to consist of branded Yunmanxiang archery school merchandise, Chankin quivers, van braces, etc. After he finishes, he starts to talk to the camera. It wasn't really my idea to go on this show, he says. He doesn't say whose idea it was, but between the archery gear and the purple lotus logo on his hoodie, I think we can guess that someone wanted Wei Wuxian on this show for advertising purposes. YJAS has had a rough time these last few years. First there was the car accident that killed Xiang Feng Miang and seriously injured his wife and daughter, and then the big fire. And I've got a bit of an unorthodox cultivation style. Wei Wuxian laughs, but his voice sounds almost sad. So hopefully no one's a stickler for doing things the old-fashioned way. Just as he says this, our Han Guansen, champion of the benefits of traditional cultivation and follower of old-fashioned rules, lands on the roof. Oh, clever. I see where you're going with this, Shep.
Did you break the ward to come in?
Lan Wanzi asks, point blank. He has his sword out and points it at Wei Wuxian, no bothering with niceties like, hello, I'm Lan Wanzi, and you are? Wei Wuxian eyes the sword, but doesn't react. He keeps lazing back on the roof, casually drinking his wine, as if this is the usual way he meets new people. And maybe it is. I don't know your life, Wei Wuxian. Of course I did, he says. Did you think I was going to stay outside the gate until morning?
You were late,
Lan Wanzi replies, and reading between the lines, he absolutely did expect that the latecomer would wait on the steps by the gate until sunrise. Yeah, well, I had to go back for some stuff I forgot, Wei Wuxian says. When he gestures to the YJS gear on the roof, recognition dawns in Lan Wanzi's face.
You are Wei Wuxian.
It's not a question.
I've heard many things about you.
Oh, my reputation precedes me. Imagine this said with the world's fakest good cheer. All good things, I hope.
I would not say it is a good thing to be known as the Grand Master of Demonic Cultivation,
Lan Wenxi says, coldly. This time, when the camera cuts to Wei Wuxian, the expression on his face is definitely bitter. The title's not entirely accurate, he says, tossing back another gulp of wine. A little of it sloshes over his lips, runs down his chin. Founder of the Ghostly Path is closer, I think. It's good to be precise about these things, don't you think? Lan Wenxi doesn't answer, and Wei Wuxian gives him a once-over before nodding to himself. White forehead, bit of a stick in the mud. Lan Wenxi, right? The younger of the twin jades. Huh, I thought the reports of your beauty might be overstated, but I can see they're not. He pauses to hiccup, then laughs, a little blurry. A beautiful man joins me on a rooftop beneath the full moon. Aren't you worried I'll get the wrong idea, Lan Argoga?
You are drunk,
Lan Wanzi says. His expression doesn't change, but somehow he manages to look angry anyway. Not quite, Wei Wuxian says, mournful. I could be, though, if you brought me another pot of wine. He wiggles the pot in Lan Wanzi's direction. This is too much for Lan Wanzi. He smacks the pot out of Wei Wuxian's hand with the tip of his sword. It bounces away and off the roof. Ah! Wei Wuxian leaps to his feet. There was still wine in there! Lan Wanzi, you owe me a pot of Emperor's Smile! He glances down and notices the sword is pointing at him again. Ah, Argaga, good idea! I do love a midnight duel! There's a great shot of them squaring off in the moonlight. Lan Wanzi, perfect posture in pale robes and shining sword, versus Wei Wuxian, listing slightly to one side, half-drunk and empty-handed. Then Lan Wanzi steps forward, the point of his sword coming up, and Wei Ying reaches for his hip and finds... well, not a sword, that's for sure. There's nothing but a black dutsi hanging from the belt loop on his jeans. He pivots out of range, quicker on his feet than I would be after half that amount of wine. Forget it, he says lightly. Dueling is against the rules, right? Wouldn't want to tempt the venerable Lan Wanzi to break the rules on the first night. With that, he descends from the roof, stalking off to who knows where and leaving Lan Wanzi alone with a pile of Yun Manxiang archery gear. After a moment, Lan Wanzi sheathes his sword, and we get an incredible close-up of his face, looking... well, his expression still hasn't changed, so I'm going to guess and say conflicted. Also, I swear he doesn't have any pores. Drop your skincare routine, King. Then he descends from the roof, picks up the fallen wine pot, and disappears in the other direction. Wow! That was an introduction! Calling it now. This season ends with these two engaged to be married. I know some of you are laughing at me for that suggestion, and sure, I'm a romantic that predicts cultivator pair-ups every season. Shout out to 3Zen for going above and beyond. But having seen the rest of the episode, I think my victory is all but assured. Day 2, 5:15 a.m. Confirmed! Lan Wanzi rises early. He's joined in the still-dark courtyard by Lan Xingyi, where they're going to do handstand meditation. I don't normally get up this early, Lan Xingyi whispers to the camera. I can't embarrass my shifu in front of Lan Shengbei, though, so I guess this is when I get up for the next 5 weeks. Halfway through the session, Lan Xingyi topples out of his handstand with an enormous crash. Lan Wanzi pauses in his own meditation and spats on Xingyi, and, having determined that he's simply fallen asleep, returns to his own practice without once altering his expression. Please, Han Guansun, have mercy on me. You're too cute. The other cultivators wake at slightly more reasonable hours, each of them donning their robes before coming in to partake of the congee Lan Wanzi has cooked up in the kitchen. The exception is Wei Wuxian, who by 10:45 still hasn't made an appearance. Lan Wanzi mentions to the others that Wei Wuxian has, in fact, arrived at the watchtower, blandly describing the whole rooftop thing by saying, "We met and spoke briefly last night." For some reason, he doesn't mention the undeniable sexual tension that crackled between them. We get 3 rapid-fire reactions to the revelation that the final cultivator is Wei Wuxian. Wen Qing sighs, rubs at her face, and says, "We're acquainted, yes." "I understand that Wei Wuxian practices demonic cultivation," Su Xie says, disapproving. "I guess he missed the memo on ghostly path versus demonic cultivation. Is that the quality of cultivator they allow on this show? I can't imagine Lan Wanzi finds such behavior acceptable." Jing Ling, looking incredibly sullen, mutters, "So he's my uncle, so what? I have a lot of uncles. He's the most annoying one, anyhow." Leaving Wei Wuxian to his beauty sleep, Lan Wanzi gathers everyone else in a dusty central courtyard, where one lonely wild persimmon tree leans against the back wall. He announces that he wishes to organize an exchange of skills. Essentially, he wants everyone to make a presentation about some aspect of their cultivation, so that we can learn from each other's strengths. Tian'a, that's my worst nightmare! Public speaking? Sharing my skills with others? Very little prep time? Please picture me shuddering in front of my computer right now. The only thing I could give a presentation on with almost no preparation would be Zi Xin's ultimate ranking of web novel ships, and somehow I don't think that's what Hong Kwan Sun is looking for. Anyway, this group are made of sterner stuff than this humble one, because they all nod their agreement. Wen Qing goes first, talking about antidotes for poisons that can be cobbled together from common woodland plants. Fuck, she's so cool! While Luo Qingyang draws on her experience with her husband to explain how to talk about cultivation with non-cultivators. This is super useful information for anyone who's ever had to tell their third cousin Xian what a night hunt is and been faced with 17 follow-up questions like, so, wait, they're not always at night? Lan Xingyi then describes, and demonstrates, his trick sword riding. I thought Hong Kwan Sun might disapprove, but he asks a series of questions about the uses of Lan Xingyi's inverted hanging stance, where he hooks one knee over the sword and rides upside down, and then compliments his form, so apparently not. When it's Lan Wanzi's turn, he brings out his gutsun, also named Wanzi, and demonstrates a little musical cultivation. He plays a bit from Sound of Vanquish, a battle song that exorcises evil, and then from the Song of Clarity, which suppresses hostile energy and calms the mind. Susha interrupts him, ostensibly to ask a question, but actually it's more of a comment. He starts describing, in lecturing tones, an adaptation he's discovered for the Song of Clarity which reverses its effects, causing disturbances to the target's temperament.
Why would you want to do that?
Lan Wanzi asks, genuinely confused.
Well, if you wanted to...
Susha sputters, then trails off, seemingly at a loss to explain why it might be useful to agitate the mind and stoke hostile energy in his fellow cultivators. He looks disappointed in Lan Wanzi's reaction, too. Or maybe angry? Or both? Susha's feelings about Lan Wanzi seem complex. Lan Wanzi returns to his demo, moving on to a description of inquiry, a song that can be used to communicate with the spirits of the dead.
The spirits cannot lie to me, he explains. Traditionally, we begin by asking the spirit to identify itself.
Very cool, a voice says, and the camera cuts to show Wei Wuxian leaning against the courtyard wall, dressed in a set of crimson underrobes. A later shot shows he's wearing black basketball shorts underneath. Scandalous! He doesn't look hungover, but he does look tired. He's got a bowl of half-eaten congee in one hand. I'm glad to hear that the Lan clan doesn't object to communicating with the dead. I heard they did. After a heated glance at the state of Wei Wuxian's robes, and maybe some people would interpret that as an angry look, but I am certain that it was in fact a horny look, Lan Wanzi says,
"We do not object to communicating with the dead."
The emphasis is clear. Right, Wei Wuxian says, and laughs, but there's no humor in it. He seems on the verge of saying something more, then hesitates and shakes his head. It's the sort of brow-furrowed, pursed-lipped headshake you do when you're trying to pull yourself out of the grip of some strong emotion. This is a little plain for my tastes, he says, finally, holding up the bowl. Any chili oil around here?
No, you are free to make some of your own, of course.
Too bad. I'm not much of a cook. Wei Wuxian hitches a shoulder at the gutsun. So, is this place haunted?
We have been doing demonstrations of our skills.
The "which you would know if you had woken before noon" goes unspoken, but Hong Kwan Sun can say a lot with very little.
Perhaps you would like to do yours later. However, I expect you will require some preparation time.
Oh, no need to worry about me, Lanar Guga. I'm ready to go. Wei Wuxian fires back. He puts the bowl of congee down and walks over to a spot in front of the other five. It's your lucky day, actually. I don't share my personal talisman designs with just anyone. Now, when I did talismans in school, it was just the same spirit-repelling talismans over and over, so I went into this with pretty low expectations. Wei Wuxian, though, turns out to have an entire arsenal of amazing talismans up his sleeves that are totally new to me, and, judging from their actions, everyone in that courtyard. In addition to the butterflies he used to break the wards, there's a talisman that looks for spiritual anomalies and lights them up, and another that causes a small explosion. It's best as a distraction. You aren't really going to injure someone with it, Wei Wuxian says, but when he fires three of them at a courtyard wall, the resulting bang knocks half the persimmons off the tree and leaves char marks on the stone. Another talisman, which Wei Wuxian says is a work in progress, ties the caster to their target with a strand of turquoise energy and keeps them within 6 qi of each other. "I don't know what to call it," he says, tossing out the talisman so that it coils around Lan Wenti's wrist. "Binding? Bonding?"
"Boring,"
Lan Wenti says, slicing it off with his sword. He may say that, but he's been watching all of this with an expression I would describe as extremely interested in spite of himself. I'm getting better at reading him, I think. And he discreetly pockets one of Wei Wuxian's extra butterfly talismans, so take from that what you will. The last talisman Wei Wuxian demonstrates can temporarily freeze a monster, a demon, or even a human in place. "The effect varies depending on the strength of the target," he explains, enthused. Now that he's warmed to his subject, he seems almost like a different person. It's kind of like he was wearing sarcasm and alcohol as armor, and now it's fallen away to reveal that he's just a guy who really, really, really likes talismans. "Let's start with you, Lan Xingyi." It is Lan Xingyi, right? "You run at me from across the courtyard and see how long it takes you to get moving again." The talisman stops Lan Xingyi. He goes from a full tilt run to totally still as soon as the talisman hits, for 20 seconds, according to a countdown clock in one corner of the screen. "All right," Wei Wuxian says with a smirk, as the now moving Lan Xingyi rubs at his legs to get the blood flowing again. "Your turn, Lan Arguga."
"Do not call me that,"
Lan Wenti snaps, flat. "Well, how about this for a deal?" Wei Wuxian says, waving the talisman's messy cinnabar strokes in Lan Wenti's direction. "I promise not to call you Arguga anymore if you can break through the talisman in 5 seconds or less."
"Gambling is forbidden by the Gusulan rules."
"Don't think of it as gambling. It's a competition. Lan Arguga versus the talisman. There's the episode title, for those of you at home playing the traditional drinking game." 5 seconds? Impossible! Lan Xingyi whispers to Xing Ling, and I don't know if Lan Wenti heard him or not, but he stands, dusts off his immaculate, dust-free robes, crosses to the other side of the courtyard, and begins to run. Wei Wuxian waits, and waits, and waits, and waits, and then, when Lan Wenti is no more than a stride away from him, hits him with the talisman. Lan Wenti freezes, gracefully, of course, with one foot suspended off the ground, and Wei Wuxian starts to count, his gray eyes glued to Wan Tenxi's unblinking gold. Suddenly, it's like there's no one else in the courtyard, a crackling energy tying them together as surely as the binding... bonding? Talisman did. "Yi," Wei Wuxian says, sounding like his throat is very dry. He swallows, audibly. "Ar?" Lan Wenti's fingertips start to twitch, and Wei Wuxian's voice drops to a whisper. "San?" The talisman's hold breaks, and Lan Wenti stumbles into Wei Wuxian's arms. For a long moment, they stand like that, like someone's hit them with another freezing talisman. Chest to chest, lips almost touching, Wei Wuxian staring up into Lan Wenti's eyes. I genuinely can't tell if they're going to kiss or start wrestling. Based on the poleaxed look on Wei Wuxian's face, he's not sure either. 3 seconds, he finally says, softly, still not moving. His hand is on the small of Lan Wenxi's back. Am I imagining this? I'm not. Very impressive. I thought I might hold you for longer than that. Lan Wenxi doesn't say anything. He appears to be staring at Wei Wuxian's lips. Still, Wei Wuxian adds, with a shaky little laugh, 3 seconds is long enough for me to take you out in a duel, I think. At that, Lan Wenxi very carefully steps back, one fist returning to its customary place behind his back. He turns to stare at one of the walls of the courtyard, as if there's nothing in the world more fascinating than the construction techniques used in the Ming Dynasty watchtowers. The tips of his ears are bright pink.
"It would not be sporting," he says, clearing his throat, "if you were to use this talisman in a duel."
"No," Wei Wuxian says, also blushing. "But I've never been very good at following the rules, Lanar." "You can't call him that anymore," Lan Xingyi objects. "He did it in 3 seconds! You can see the exact moment that Lan Wenxi and Wei Wuxian remember that 5 other people, strangers mostly, have witnessed whatever that was. A prelude to a kiss? Seduction by talisman? An untold number of viewers' gay awakening? I cannot believe any of that just happened. Whenever I need a hit of serotonin, I'm just gonna come and replay that 10 seconds over and over and over again. Thank you for my life, Cultivation World. No, I suppose I can't, can I? What should I call you then? Wu Xian manages, but Lan Wanxi has already turned on his heel, scooping up his gutsen, and left the courtyard. Wu Xian looks over at the others, mutters, right. Well, class dismissed, and takes off just as hastily in the opposite direction. Xingling and Susha have very different reactions to being let off the hook for their presentations. A relieved Xingling tells Lan Xingyi that he was probably going to do some archery or something, while Susha complains to anyone who will listen, a list which is extremely short, perhaps non-existent, that he didn't get to demonstrate his adaptation to a musical cultivation technique called evocation. If it was anything like the adaptation you described for Song of Clarity, Susha, it's probably for the best that we didn't get to see it. Day 3, 10:35 p.m. The final scene of the episode is Xingling and Lan Xingyi lying on Lan Xingyi's bed. They seem to have bonded over their status as the junior members of the Watchtower crew. What do you think you'll miss most while you're here? Lan Xingyi asks. My mother's soup, Xingling blurts out. He then immediately backtracks, launching into a monologue about his car, which is apparently tricked out with all sorts of cultivation upgrades. It's too late, though. We already know the truth. I like him better already. What about you? He mutters, when he runs out of things to say about his sliffy. Do you think Nissan paid for the product placement? What are you gonna miss? Nothing, Lan Xingyi says, promptly. And then, as if suddenly imagining Lan Xingyi's flat, disapproving stare, okay, lying is forbidden, so I'm definitely gonna miss my Lan Junior's group chat. He turns to the camera. Su Chui, don't forget to feed the rabbits, okay? Good advice, Lan Xingyi. Let's all go make sure we fed our rabbits, and meet back here next week for Episode 2. Episode 2. Go Where the Chaos Is. Days 5 through 8. We begin this episode with a Cultivation World classic, the montage of cultivators struggling with pre-modern life. First, there's Lan Xingyi, who gets the sleeves of his white robes and his congee at breakfast, his hot pot at lunch, and, I don't know how this is possible, Liu Xinyuan's Cha Mian at dinner. I like to wear a t-shirt and jeans, you know? He sighs as he pulls another noodle out of the Tiankun sleeve. And this is so much fabric, and there are so many things to put it in or catch it on. In the Watchtower Library, Lan Wanxi, in the background of the shot, appears to be cataloging its contents, although many of the books look like they're long past legibility. Luo Xingyang laments the state of her knowledge about the world. I like to think I know a lot, about a lot of things, she says, pulling another disintegrating scroll down from one of the high shelves. I thought, oh, I answer Mian Mian's questions about things all the time, right? But it turns out I don't know anything. I've just got the internet. I need delivery. Where's Mei Tuan when you need it? He moans. I really want Rui Gan Mian, or Dupi, or I want to open a fridge and find leftovers in a jar of chili oil. I just don't have the energy to cook when I get out of bed, you know? Or when I'm drinking. Or ever, really. He pulls out a blank talisman paper and a stick of cinnabar and tips his head to one side, considering. Okay, so I actually came up with that explosion talisman when I was trying to create a heat maintenance talisman for a bath, he explains as he starts to scribble. The theory of temperature transference was sound, though, so maybe if I... There's a shot of a bowl filled with dry rice, water, an uncooked egg, chopped greens, and sliced radishes. Wei Wuxian, standing on the other side of the room, aims a talisman at the bowl, and then... Cut to Lan Xingyi, Luo Xinyuan, and Lan Wanxi practicing sword forms in the courtyard, when there's an enormous explosion from the kitchen. I'm fine, Wei Wuxian yells. I'm fine. The food's a total loss, but I'm fine. Nobody worry about me. Oh man, Wei Tianbei is so cool, Lan Wanxi says. He told me he's designing a compass that can track evil spirits. Isn't that awesome? Our Han Kwan-sen's fanboy's allegiances may be shifting, and it seems that at least one member of the group isn't bothered by the whole demonic cultivator thing.
Such an item would be very useful, Tsingy.
Lan Wan-si agrees, just as gray smoke starts to billow out of the kitchen.
If, of course, he can complete it.
Day 9, 2:14 p.m. Susha is also struggling, but not with adapting to a life of traditional cultivation. No, Susha, who is currently in the woods near the outbuildings, pretending to meditate, is struggling to adapt to life with Wei Wuxian. I know he's pretending because he keeps opening one eye and looking around to see if anybody is watching him. And then, when Lan Wanxi glides along the path without a glance in his direction, he gives up entirely.
This has been going on all morning,
he grumbles, after a series of loud explosions from a nearby outbuilding.
At this rate, his little experiments will bring the whole watchtower down on us.
Another bang, and something that looks a little like a firework blooms in the gentian sky. A lotus, worked in strands of purple light. A moment later, muffled voices are audible.
You've had some success, then?
Lan Wenxi asks, as the camera momentarily cuts to the area behind the nearby outbuilding. He's being quite formal, but this is a big change from their first meeting, at least. It still needs some fine-tuning, Wei Wuxian says, holding a small tube out for Lan Wanxi's inspection. But it's a reusable, talisman-powered signal flare, and it should be good for maybe 300 uses? So, back in the trees, Su Xia is eating vinegar.
And for some reason, Lan Wanxi just puts up with it,
he seethes.
Puts up with him. This morning I pointed out to him that Wei Wuxian is a demonic cultivator and he just nodded as if that were normal or acceptable.
He's not the only one with a Wei Wuxian problem, either. We get a series of shots of Wei Wuxian offering to help Xingling with things, and Xingling angrily refusing assistance. The sequence ends with Wei Wuxian saying, if you dropped your back shoulder down a bit, you'd have more strength on the draw, when he finds Xingling shooting in the courtyard. Xingling immediately brings his back shoulder up and fires towards the persimmon tree. The camera tracks the arrow. It skitters off the trunk and lands harmlessly in the dirt. Xingling drops the bow and mutters something that sounds like, why don't you go hang out with your ghost friends? I hear they like you. Just long enough for Wei Wuxian to hear. He's not even that much older than me, Xingling fumes, now in his room. What does he know? He doesn't even use a sword. And I've been shooting since before I could walk. Tutu already gives me lessons. If Wei Wuxian tells me how to draw a talisman or string a bow or identify the difference between demons and imps one more time, I'm going to fucking stab him. Back in the courtyard, Wei Wuxian picks up another bow, knocks an arrow.
Hands down, straight forearm, open shoulder, he says softly. And then he takes careful aim. Release.
The arrow splits one of the few remaining persimmons in half. That poor tree isn't going to survive its encounters with these cultivators. Yunmen Xiang's archery school, folks, Wei Wuxian says, but his heart's not in it. He glances towards the door where Xingling disappeared. It's just, he was born when I was 10. My tietia had him at 18, right? And for the last few years, I haven't been around very much. Things have been difficult. A long story. And Atia says the kids at school were on him about being the nephew of the Grand Master of Demonic Cultivation. So he just... he swallows, and for a moment there's this look on his face, like he's lost something he didn't even know he had to lose. He has a lot of reasons not to like me, I guess. I'm trying. He trails off, picks the bow up, and begins to shoot again. Day 10, 1:45 p.m. In the library, Lan Wanxi is reading, while Wei Wuxian pursues a hobby I call trying to get a rise out of Lan Wanxi. He does an inkbrush portrait of Lan Wanxi with a flower in his hair. No reaction. He comes over and drapes himself over the chair beside Lan Wanxi and asks him a series of questions about his life. And then, when Lan Wanxi doesn't respond, answers them himself, in character as Lan Wanxi. Do not worry. Silence is simply how I demonstrate affection. No reaction. He tells a hair-raising story about an encounter he had with a crowd of fire-breathing Igwe at Mansion KTV. We only hear part of it, but I'm not actually sure how he survived. No reaction. What should I call you, if I don't call you Lan Argoga? He asks, giving up. Lan Laoshi? Lao Lan? Just Goga? Tsiashong, maybe. Lan Wenxi does react to this, by hitting Wei Wuxian with the Lan Clan silencing spell. Despite the fact that he can't open his mouth, Wei Wuxian looks pleased. It seems like Wei Wuxian has decided he'll deal with your sexual tension by teasing Lan Wenxi, whereas Lan Wenxi's tactic, for now at least, seems to be attempting to ignore it and Wei Wuxian. If I might make a suggestion, friends, you could consider giving in to it. As soon as the spell wears off, about 20 minutes later, according to the caption, Wei Wuxian leaps right back into the name discussion. Okay, I know. You can call me Wei Ying. That's my milk name. What's yours?
And why would I tell you that?
Lan Wenxi asks, lifting his eyes from the book. It's a Ming Dynasty text, if the thread binding is any indication, dealing with some sort of forbidden form of musical cultivation. Because I'll be quiet if you do. Wei Wuxian asks, kind of breathily.
No need,
Lan Wenxi says, and hits him with another silencing spell. Day 10, 6:15 p.m. It's the group's first night hunt. Only Lan Xingyi, Lan Wenxi, Luo Qingyuan, and Wen Qing are participating, since Lan Wenxi judges it unnecessary to take the entire crew to deal with what he deems to be a small disturbance. Wen Qing is sitting in a house in one of the small rural villages in the hills below the watchtower, inspecting a wound on a man's thigh. It's long and shallow, but the edges are dark, angry-looking. Apparently we're still on the theme of cultivators struggling to adapt, because Wen Qing is muttering, "The question is, infected or cursed?" to herself as she presses on the edges of the wound. The wounded man makes a face. Either he's unimpressed with Wen Qing's bedside manner, or he's gritting his teeth in pain. Back home, I have a diagnostic machine to tell me, not to mention prefab antidotes. There's a shrill yowl outside the house, and then Lan Xingyi puts his head in through the door. Lan Qingbei says to tell you that the answer is cursed. Okay, gotta go. I've got a bunch of Maogui trying to put their claws in my butt. Day 12, 3:35 p.m. We find Wen Qing and Wei Wuxian in the overgrown garden behind the watchtower, robes hiked up, knees in the dirt. They're weeding, Wei Wuxian, and searching for medicinal supplies, Wen Qing. It doesn't look like anyone's done any work here for at least 20 years, so when I say that Wei Wuxian is weeding, he's essentially just pulling everything up and piling it off to the side for Wen Qing to examine. We could grow radishes, Wei Wuxian says, gesturing to an empty patch he's cleared in the soil. They grow really fast. They'd be ready to harvest before we're done here. Greens, too, maybe. Spinach? Lettuce? Wen Qing pauses, her arms full of kudzu. Wei Wuxian, she says, a little sharp. Are we going to talk about it? Are we just going to keep acting like everything is normal? He doesn't answer, pulling another weed just a little too viciously. I mean, I haven't seen you since... She trails off, shakes her head. I know, he says, not turning around. He puts one hand on his dantian, softly, almost like he's feeling an old wound. I know. Afterwards, you didn't message. I thought you were dead. Yeah, well, close enough, I guess. And then after, I thought you probably figured it out. From, well, people talk. People talk a lot of bullshit, Wen Qing says, sharply. She drops the kudzu and crosses the garden to him, forces him to stand up. He's almost a foot taller than her, but she manages to loom over him anyway. Can someone please teach me the trick of this? My sisters do it to me all the time. So, how are you? He looks away. I'm surviving. She tugs out one of her silver needles and lines it up like she's going to toss it at him, then stops and puts it back in her sleeve. You... She seems to think of, and then reject, about 8 different things that she could say, before finally going with, "Why are you here? It's a terrible idea. Lucien shrugs. I couldn't get out of it. Business is business, as Auntie Yu likes to tell me. And I promised I'd be on my best behavior. She keeps looking at him until he shakes his head and laughs. Qingjia. Why the interrogation? I'm fine, all right? Everything's fine. It's been a bit. Tell me how your brother's doing. Still into archery? The camera cuts to Lan Xingyi telling Xingling all about the previous day's night hunt. He's retelling Lan Wanxi's and Luo Qingyan's takedown of the yowling mass of Maoguai, complete with hilarious sound effects, so we don't find out whether Wen Xing's unnamed brother is, in fact, still into archery. Nor do we find anything more out about Wei Wuxian's mysterious past, which apparently somehow involves Wen Xing. I don't even know where to begin with the guesses about Wei Wuxian's backstory. A curse? An embarrassing run-in with a Hulitzing? A bad fall while sword riding? That might explain why he doesn't carry a sword, but I'm not sure any of it would explain demonic cultivation. Day 15, 4:45 p.m. Late in the afternoon, a flare goes up from the village closest to the watchtower. This time, it's Wei Wuxian, Xingling, Lan Wanxi, and Su She that head out on the night hunt. At the edge of the village, they meet up with a young woman with all white eyes, who explains that half of the village was struck down with strange fevers after a weird powdery fog blew in from the woods. Wei Wuxian and Xingling go inside to inspect the afflicted, while Lan Wanxi and Su She head for the woods. Corpse poison, Wei Wuxian concludes, after opening a patient's mouth and inspecting his tongue. How do you know? Xingling objects, disbelieving. You've barely looked at him. Oh, I know all the symptoms. If you spend a lot of time around walking corpses, Wei Wuxian catches himself and waves one hand. Never mind that, Aleng. You'll just have to trust me on this one. I just looked up corpse poison on Baidu. I have regrets. Wei Wuxian sends Xingling to make glutinous rice, which Xingling, unsurprisingly, complains about. If I'd wanted to cook, I would have gone on MasterChef. And goes off to help the other two. Outside, Lan Wanxi is engaged in a fight with a nine-fingered rogue cultivator, who seems to be both strong and sneaky. He's making Han Quansun sweat, at least. Well, maybe not literally. I don't think Lan Wanxi sweats, but you know what I mean. And what is Su She doing to assist in this fight, you might ask? Wei Wuxian seems to be wondering the same thing. He prods Su She, who is leaning off to one side, curled up in a ball, with the toe of one sneaker.
He inhaled the powder.
Lan Wanxi explains, parrying a heavy blow. Oh, don't move around too much then, Wei Wuxian says to Su She. If it gets in your heart, you'll become a walking corpse.
What? Is there a cure?
Su She says, perturbed. Wei Wuxian, is there a cure? Wei Wuxian ignores him in favor of throwing an explosion talisman at the rogue cultivator, who seems to decide that the odds are no longer in his favor. He uses the cover of the explosion to leap away, disappearing over the roof of a nearby house.
We should detain him,
Lan Wanxi says. Since he could probably chase the man down, this seems like an obvious challenge to Wei Wuxian.
I believe he is the cause of the illness plaguing the villagers,
Wei Wuxian says. Which, wait, hold up. Did he manage to get Lan Wanxi's milk name out of him after all? Before unleashing the boring talisman. The crimson cord snakes over the top of the building and drags the startled rogue cultivator back over the roof, clattering across the tiles. A second version of the same talisman neatly disarms him. Wei Wuxian gives Lan Wanxi a cheeky little grin. Not so boring anymore, right? At the post-night hunt debrief, Lan Wanxi is very complimentary of Wei Wuxian's handling of events.
It was lucky for the villagers that you were aware of the cure, Wei Ying, he says. Events might have ended very differently if you had not arrived in time.
Wow, someone's done about-face on his original assessment of Wei Wuxian. Liu Qingyang, in an interview, suggests that her initial opinion of Wei Wuxian has improved. I wasn't sure what to expect, honestly, she says. Pretty much everything I'd heard about him was terrible. The way some people talk, you'd think he was wandering around with a gang of ghosts and killing sect disciples for fun. But everything he's done here has been great. When I get home, I'm going to tell people to shut up with the criticisms. Su She, on the other hand, is spending his recuperation time, Wei Wuxian has already given him glutinous rice, which neutralizes the corpse poison, complaining about the man who saved him. talismans aren't really cultivation. He says, those are just crafty tricks. Anyone can draw a talisman. You don't even need a golden core for that. Day 19, 7:30 a.m., somewhere in the woods to the northwest of the tower. Seems like this must be the designated night hunt episode. The whole group is headed out to respond to a message from a distant village saying that a number of measuring serpents have been spotted in the nearby woods. Wei Wuxian can't travel by sword. Or what? He just says, I don't have a sword, which isn't really an explanation, so someone's provided him with a donkey. I call him Xiao Pingguo, Wei Wuxian says, as they trudge along a dry river bottom. He's very... attempting, unsuccessfully, to yank Xiao Pingguo's head up from a clump of dry brown grass. Food motivated, I think he might be the slowest donkey in the world. We're buds though, right, Xiao Pingguo? Right? Xiao Pingguo snorts and keeps mouthing at the dry grass. The others are riding their swords at varying heights. So Xia, almost out of sight on the ground, is muttering something that sounds like, why do we have to accommodate him? Luo Qingyang and Wen Xing, a little lower, are laughing and chatting about something. They seem to be good friends by now. Qing Ling and Lan Qingyi are only about 2 body lengths off the ground, probably so they don't get hurt when their attempts at flips and barrel rolls inevitably end with a fall. And finally, Lan Wanxi, who was hovering a zhang above the round, has now disembarked to walk alongside Xiao Pingguo. He seems to have the magic touch, or maybe he's just got an apple in his sleeve, because the donkey stops eating and begins to move along at a good clip. You don't have to keep me company, Lan Zhang, Wei Wuxian says. I'm still not over this. He calls him Lan Zhang, and Lan Wanxi allows it. I know it's more fun up there.
I wish to talk, Wei Ying.
Lan Wanxi says, expressionless, and after a moment, Wei Wuxian shrugs his acceptance. Soon after, he brings out the ditza, and for a moment I think we're going to get a demonstration of some sort of wicked cultivation, but instead he just starts noodling away at a cover of Mao Bui's Someone Like Me. Halfway through, Lan Qingyi starts to sing along, and then Luo Qingyang, and by the end everyone except Su Shi is singing, even Lan Wanxi, in a warm tenor that's a surprising contrast to his baritone speaking voice. The day seems to drag on after that. There's a series of shots of cultivators wilting in the unseasonably warm autumn sun. At one point, Qing Ling drops down so he's riding level with Xiao Pingguo's back. Lan Tianbei, he says, sounding whiny, or maybe dehydrated. Isn't this whole night hunt kind of beneath us? My dad says measuring serpents are easy prey.
One measuring serpent, alone, is often simple work for a cultivator.
Lan Wanxi agrees, very seriously. I bet he's a great teacher. I'd pay good money for him to come and sternly tell me how I'm messing up my meditation.
But in a group, they can be difficult to handle. And it is not a question of what is easy, or what prey is most prestigious. We have the ability to help those who cannot cultivate, and so I have always thought that we should go where the chaos is.
Qing Ling rises into the sky again, looking thoughtful, while Wei Wuxian leans forward to look at Lan Wanxi, a fond smile on his face. Go where the chaos is? He asks.
Does that surprise you, Wei Ying?
Not surprised, just, I don't know, I thought...
That I was hidebound, perhaps.
Lan Wanxi says, dryly.
A stick in the mud, I believe you said.
Aya, Lan Zhang. Wei Wuxian laughs. Don't throw my words back in my face. You had me at sword's point.
I am sorry for that, Wei Ying.
Lan Wanxi says, turning to look him in the eye.
I was rash, too quick to judge.
A flicker of something in Wei Wuxian's eyes, an ember leaping to flame, only to be doused beneath a wave of regret. He pats Xiao Pingguo lightly on the flank, then leans back, so he can't see Lan Wanxi's face anymore. Yeah, well, don't worry about it. I've had worse first encounters, and people have said worse things about me. I wasn't at my best that night either, he says, then gestures upward. Ah, look, Aling and Xingyi are racing. Maybe you should head up there again, Lan Zhang. Someone needs to keep an eye on them. Lan Wanxi, who knows a request for space when he hears one, mounts his sword and lifts off, leaving Wei Wuxian to trudge forward, alone with his donkey, carrying some weight that looks, on this recapper's screen at least, rather like bitter disappointment. Day 19, 4:15 p.m., a rural village in northwest Hubei. The group arrives at their destination late afternoon. All the houses are quiet and dark, and the streets empty. Our crew of cultivators stands around, looking confused, until a woman pops her head out a gate in a stone wall and gestures for everyone to come inside. Once everyone's scurried through the gate, the woman introduces herself as a member of the village committee. "It's not just two measuring serpents, it's a whole nest," she says, explaining that the nest is in the forest to the west of the village. "They've taken an interest in the village, and now we can't leave our homes, since they're certainly taller than any of us." "Okay, why don't we draw them to this spot?" Wei Wuxian says, scratching a hasty map in the dirt of the yard with a stick. "Here is an open area to the south of the village. Once they're gathered together, it'll be easy, like turtles caught in a jar."
"I was not aware you could herd measuring serpents, Wei Ying,"
Lan Wenxi says, dryly. "You'll see, Lanjia," is Wei Wuxian's cheerful retort, before he leads everyone down the road to the south. The fact that Lan Wenxi doesn't ask any further questions about the plan, but simply goes along with it, tells us everything we need to know about his current opinion of Wei Wuxian, I think. In the clearing, Wei Wuxian pulls a number of black flags out of his Jiankun sleeve, each marked with a series of incantations and motifs. He distributes them on stakes in a loose circle around the clearing. "These are spirit-attracting flags," he says, withdrawing from the circle he's made. The flags hang limp in the still air, but something about the red incantations and the black background is unnerving. 5 is probably overkill for measuring serpents. We don't have to wait long. He's right. The targets do show up almost right away. 7 silver serpents, each the length of a commercial jet, slither reluctantly into the clearing, almost like they've been magnetized. "Not to state the obvious, but that is a whole fuck ton of measuring serpents," Lan Xingyi says, pulling out his sword. Fight scene! Lan Xingyi, Qingling, and Luo Qingyang leap around, bashing the serpents with flashing sword glares and heavy blows, while Lan Xing flings those deadly-looking needles from outside the circle. She catches one in the acupoint over the eyes, and it topples to the ground like a pine in a lightning storm. The serpents fight back with serpenty tactics, like snapping their enormous fangs and writhing around wildly. Lan Wenxi pulls Wanxi out of his sleeve and starts blasting Sound of Vanquish. Su Xiao has his Guzin out too, but the first thing he manages to do is send a wave of sound that disrupts Lan Wenxi's attack. Lan Wenxi then whips out a Guzin string instead. He wraps it around one serpent's neck and begins to pull, in what the captions indicate is the very coolly named cord assassination technique. Wei Wuxian, hovering on the edge of the circle, starts to raise his hands, like he's going to do some form of cultivation, and then stops, seeming frustrated. "Should have brought a bow," he says, shaking his head, fingers tightening into a fist. Whoops. Instead, he begins firing freezing talismans into the mix, but the serpents are strong. Not as strong as Lan Wenxi, but even still each talisman earns only 5 seconds or so of reprieve before the serpents are back in action, their barrel-thick tails whipping across the clearing. Just then, there's a scream in the distance, high-pitched and terrified. Wei Wuxian turns and sprints toward it. At this point, there are still 3.5 serpents in the area marked out by the flags. One of them has lost its tail, but since it's still taller than the humans, it hasn't lost its zeal for attempting to devour them. So Lan Wenxi asked Qingling to go and assist Wei Wuxian, while everyone else remains behind. The camera follows Qingling as he runs through the trees and bursts out onto a dirt road. He's greeted by a stomach-churning sight. An enormous measuring serpent, maybe 4 times as large as the others, looming over a cowering little boy. Qingling is too far away to be any help. Wei Wuxian is closer, but not close enough to do anything, not without a sword, and maybe not even if he had one. It's out of range of his talismans, too. I'm covering my eyes and peeking through my fingers because the kid is 3, 4 at the most, just a baby. "Up," Wei Wuxian says, cold and calm. He's planted himself in the middle of the road, hands raised, palms up. In response, thick black strands of energy leap up and loop around the serpent, dragging it away from the shrieking child. I'm no expert, but I'm pretty sure that's not spiritual energy. I'm pretty sure that's resentful energy. And Wei Wuxian, with one hand out and a red flame burning on his palm, is somehow controlling it. All right, I guess I knew he could do something like that, but it's one thing to hear it and another entirely to see it. "Get the kid," Wei Wuxian says to Qingling. "What?" Qingling says. He's staring at the mass of resentful energy, eyes wide. "Go get the kid, Aling." Tsing shakes free of his shock and whips in on his sword, dragging the boy out from beneath the struggling serpent. As soon as they're clear, Wei Wuxian claps his hands together and yells, "Close!" The resentful energy coils into a crimson-black ball, the writhing serpent at its center. And then, when Wei Wuxian separates his hands again and hisses, "Open!" There's no more serpent, just chunks of scaly flesh littered across the road, steaming slightly in the aftermath of an enormous crimson explosion. There's a soft sound from behind him, and Wei Wuxian turns to find Lan Wanxi, a bloody Gutsun string dangling from his fingers, a look of startlement, awe, disgust on his face. Honestly, I can't tell, and I bet Wei Wuxian can't either. "Well," Wei Wuxian says, sounding weary. "There you go, Anja. Another little skills demonstration." Before Lan Wanxi can reply, the little boy wriggles free from Xingling's clutches, runs to Wei Wuxian, and leaps into his arms. "You saved me," he says, and then bursts into big, snotty sobs. "I feel you, buddy." Just as the others break through the tree cover, swords out, they scan the scene. Crying child, serpent blasted into smithereens, and Wei Wuxian looking a little grim. "I can't help remembering what he said to Wen Qing. I promise to be on my best behavior. I think we might have just seen him breaking that promise." Day 19, 9:45 p.m. A forest, at night. The group stops to camp for the night on the way back to the watchtower. Su Xia, Qing Ling, and Lan Qingyi are in their tents, while Luo Qingyang and Wen Qing are sitting together in the dark, stargazing and idly chatting about which adaptation of Legend of Condor Heroes is the best one. It's definitely not the 2017 version, whatever Wen Qing says. That leaves Wei Wuxian and Lan Wanxi sitting by the fire.
"Wei Ying,"
Lan Wanxi says, breaking the silence.
"Why?"
"Why what, Lan Jia?" Wei Wuxian says, grim, even though he knows, and we know, exactly what Lan Wanxi is asking.
"Why do you cultivate the ghostly path?"
He doesn't sound angry or accusatory about it, but even in the flickering firelight, it's obvious the Wei Wuxian's hackles go up. "It gets the job done, doesn't it?" he says with a sharp laugh. It's hard to argue with that, after that impressive display of cultivation power. And so, why not? Lan Wanxi takes the question seriously.
"Because there will be a price to pay,"
he says.
"This path will harm your body. It will harm your temperament even more. Your reputation..."
Wei Wuxian shrugs, cutting him off. "That's my business, isn't it?"
"Let me play the song of clarity for you, Wei Ying,"
Lan Wanxi says.
"If you come to Cloud Recesses, we can determine if it has done any damage, if it is reversible."
"Lan Wanxi," Wei Wuxian says. Very cold. Ouch. He surges to his feet. "Let me rephrase. What I do with my body, my cultivation, and my reputation is none of your business." With that, he disappears into the night, leaving us with that emotional cliffhanger for the end of episode 2. Episode 3, The 26th Year of Tianxing, The Year of Dingwei. I see there's a lot of speculation in Weibo about Wei Wuxian's reasons for taking up demonic cultivation, and some of you have asked if I've been investigating the matter. Nope, I have not. These recaps aren't all about the gossip, unlike some people's. Cough, sect leader Yao. So while I'm as curious as the rest of you, okay, yes, I really want to know. I'm not going to go digging around on social media looking for clues or indulging in ridiculous theories. It's not because he was swallowed by a giant tortoise and had to invent demonic cultivation to get out, okay? It's just not. Day 22, 2:44 p.m. We open with an overhead shot of Su Xia sneaking around in the area behind the moon gate that leads from the watchtower garden towards a steep drop-off. At one point, he trips over something, a stone, maybe? It looks like there might be ruins perched on the cliff's edge, and right after, there's a distant, ominous rumble. Why do I have this feeling we've just seen Su Xia disturb something that shouldn't have been disturbed? Anyway, Su Xia seems surprised when the camera catches him sitting on a stone mound, yep, definitely ruins, looking at something in his hand.
He hastily shoves whatever it is back in his sleeve. Was that a cell phone? Was he out there looking for better reception?
Just exploring,
he says, unconvincingly, before launching into a happy little rant about how the recent night hunt seems to have helped Lan Wanxi recognize that Wei Wuxian is not the sort of cultivator he should associate with. Whatever that means. Day 22, 2:54 p.m. At that very moment, Lan Wanxi is with Wen Qing in the room where she mixes her elixirs and antidotes. Somehow, he's intuited that she knows something about Wei Wuxian's decision to follow the ghostly path, and he wants to know what that something is. Kind of dispels the notion that he's not interested in associating Wei Wuxian, doesn't it? Because it's Lan Wanxi, he just asks her, rather than trying to charm or trick her into talking about it. Have you asked Wei Wuxian about this? Wen Qing replies, not looking up from the blue-green mixture she's decocting into a clay jar.
Yes,
Lan Wanxi says, because lying is forbidden.
And?
She begins to infuse the mixture with a steady stream of spiritual energy.
You wouldn't tell me.
Well then, I'm certainly not going to tell you either, she says, acerbic.
You do know the answer, then.
Lan Wanxi says, and I take back what I said. That is tricky, Han Guansen. Meanwhile, behind the outbuildings, Lan Xingyi is also trying to pump someone for information about demonic cultivation, except he's gone directly to the source. Qinling is lingering off to one side, acting like he's not interested, but I bet the questions are actually his. He was the one who witnessed the whole serpent goes boom incident, after all. How does it work? I mean, what's the theory? Lan Xingyi asks. And does it feel different than cultivating with spiritual energy? Do you find it hard to control? Wei Wuxian seems tempted to answer, but then shakes his head. That's all boring stuff, Tingyi, he says. How about you two help me test this new talisman I'm designing instead? It's an adaptation of a portal talisman. Qinling and Lan Xingyi disappear faster than they could if they were actually using a portal talisman, which is probably the smart choice given the history of Wei Wuxian's works in progress. Wei Wuxian chuckles and reveals that the new talisman is blank. Works every time, he says, grinning. Day 26, 2:42 p.m. Lan Xingyi is crouching in the back garden, inspecting a row of tiny radish plants. I'm hiding out here, Hifo whispers to the camera. Weird stuff's been happening here for the last few days, plus everyone's been super grumpy, so I'm trying to keep a low profile. Just then, Wen Qing comes out the door, hands on her hips. Xingyi, she snaps. Did you play with my mortar and pestle?
No,
he says. There are dangerous ingredients in the herb room, she says, irritated. You have no idea what sorts of problems you could cause if you combine the wrong ones. She whirls around and goes back inside, leaving a confused Lan Xingyi to share his laments with the radishes. It really wasn't me, he mutters, wrinkling up his nose. Lying is forbidden. I don't even know where she keeps the mortar and pestle. In the library, Lan Wanxi and Wei Wuxian are sitting at separate tables, reading in silence. Looks like they haven't entirely patched things up since the campfire conversation. Su She is in there too, alternately browsing that same musical cultivation text that Lan Wanxi was reading the last time we saw the library, and sneaking glances at Han Guansen.
There is an interesting note here on the use of suppression arrays,
Lan Wanxi says, a bit stiffly, but from where I am, that reads like a peace offering. The problem with suppression arrays is that they're useless if you're anywhere busier than a moderate-sized town, Wei Wuxian says, not looking up. Repelling arrays, too. If you look on the next page... Lan Wanxi turns the page, then surges to his feet at the sight of something in the book.
Wei Ying, he says, low and irritated. You should show more respect for the books, even if you do not respect their contents.
He glides out. Lan Wanxi wouldn't be so uncouth as to stomp out of a room. Well, Wei Wuxian nails after him. Lan Cha, whatever it wasn't me, I swear. Su She watches all this with keen interest. The camera returns to Wen Qing, who enters the central hall to find Luo Qingyang staring at a massive archery gear on the floor. If he's going to teach them to shoot, can't he teach them to pick up after themselves? She mutters. Do they think I'm their mother? Hey, Wen Qing says. I got a message from a village to the south of here asking for help with some sort of crop curse. Want to come check it out? Seriously? So much. Yes, please. Any excuse to get out of here. Next, we see Wei Wuxian, muttering grumpily to himself and preparing to enter the wooden tub in the bathing room. There are whirling tornadoes of steam rising from the water as he derobes, but when he steps in, he shrieks, jumping back. A wave of water sloshes over the side of the tub, visible even from the perspective of the camera, which remains modestly on the other side of the white screen.
Fuck me! He hisses. It's colder than snow melts, and I just heated it!
Sometime later, Xin Leng is sitting on the balcony on the second floor of the watchtower, a bow in hand. He's aiming at something down below while talking to Lan Xingyi, who's practicing his one-handed handstands.
3 nights in a row, the same dream,
Xin Leng complains, carefully adjusting his posture. Shoulder down, hands down, forearm straight, and where have we heard that before? Before he releases the shot.
I keep dreaming about this guy, and somehow I know he's my brother, even though I don't have a brother. And he's trying to kill me, I think.
I had that dream too, Lan Xingyi says, flipping back to his feet. And if you put that together with the weird stuff happening around here... He pulls one of Wei Wuxian's spiritual anomaly-seeking talismans out of his sleeve, grinning. Do you want to see if we can find a ghost? Down in the graveyard, Su Shu goes to retrieve his robes from a clothesline, only to find them riddled with arrow holes. I wonder if Su Shu made the mistake of sharing his opinions about Wei Wuxian a little too loudly. Wei Wuxian may not be Xin Leng's favorite uncle, but he's still Xin Leng's uncle, you know? He pulls the robes down and stomps off. Unlike Lan Wenxi, Su Shu definitely stomps. And one jump cut later, he's heading out the front gates, dressed in modern clothes. Day 26, 5:35 p.m. Another overhead shot of the crumbling ruins. There's a steady glow coming from the stones, presumably from the talisman, but Lan Xingyi and Xin Leng don't seem to have noticed.
No, the spirit's definitely older than that, Xin Leng is saying. When the watchtower was abandoned, it was because of reports of malicious spirits. One of the cultivators staffing the watchtower wrote, "There is something here with us," in the daily records.
Okay, first of all, that's super creepy, Lan Xingyi says. And second of all, how the hell do you know that?
I wanted to know something about where I was going to live for the next 6 weeks, Xin Leng says defensively. I did some research. That's not weird.
I didn't say it was weird, Lan Xingyi retorts, turning back to look at Xin Leng. But when he does, Xin Leng isn't there anymore. An unnatural mist has risen along the smattering of pines along the cliff's edge, obscuring the view for more than a few feet in any direction.
Aleng? Aleng? Where'd you go?
Lan Xingyi whips his sword out, clutching one of the explosion talismans in his other fist.
Xingyi? Xingyi!
Xin Leng, too, has unsheathed his sword. He stumbled into an area with a low stone dome.
This place sucks. Maybe we should...
What Xin Leng thinks they should do remains unspoken because the ground opens like a giant maw and gobbles him right up. Lan Xingyi arrives a moment later, just in time to see the jaws of the earth snapping shut, stones grinding together with a toothy crunch. The only sign that Xin Leng was ever there is his sword, abandoned in the dirt.
Oh shit, Lan Xingyi says. Oh shit!
The next shot is Lan Xingyi sprinting through the watchtower, yelling for help. He skids around a corner and knocks a still-damp Wei Wuxian, who's coming out of the bathing room, to the ground. He's weirdly easy to knock down for a cultivator.
Whoa, Xingyi, slow down,
Wei Wuxian says, climbing to his feet. What's happening?
It's Aling! A haunting!
Lan Xingyi says, panting.
And then and got eaten by the ruins!
There are other words in there, but they're too tangled up to make sense of it. Wei Wuxian doesn't care about the details, though.
Show me,
he says, sharp, already on his way out.
What about Lang Zhengbai? Should we get him?
I can handle it. If I need... Better if he... Well, like I said, I can handle it. They're already at the moon gate, pushing through the overhanging vines and out into the pine woods beyond. When they arrive at the spot where Xin Leng disappeared... The maze array, if that's what it was, seems to be inactive now. Wei Wuxian crouches and puts one hand on the ground. Resentful energy begins to twist up from the dirt, like winding lines of charcoal silk.
Stand back,
he says, and Lan Xingyi promptly obeys, backing up as far as he can while still watching Wei Wuxian. I could explode the ground with the talisman. Wei Wuxian mutters, maybe to himself, or maybe as an explanation for Lan Xingyi. But I don't know how deep he is, and we're close to the edge of the cliff. It could be unstable. So... He raises his hand up, in a beckoning gesture. The energy rises too, and with it rises the soil, particle by particle, grains of dirt, pebbles, broken chunks of worked stone, all suspended in the air, like a sandstorm frozen above the dunes of the Tengger. As more and more bits of soil choke the air, Wei Wuxian's eyes take on a red sheen, and sweat starts running down his forehead. Finally, there! Lan Xingyi yells. There he is! He points to the rising Tingling, slumped in the smoky embrace of the resentful energy, eyes closed, blood running freely from his nose. As soon as Tingling's feet break the surface, Wei Wuxian slams his hand down, sending the soil scurrying back to the dark places it left behind. Tingling collapses to the ground. Is he... Wei Wuxian has one hand on Tingling's pulse, the other under his nostrils, before Lan Xingyi can finish the question. After a second, he nods and sags in relief, just as Tingling starts to mutter, in a raw, strained voice, No, it's not fair! Please, let her... What's he talking about? Lan Xingyi says, crouching beside Wei Wuxian. A hallucination, Wei Wuxian says. Part of the curse, probably. Can you suppress it? Lan Xingyi asks. No, not in time, at least. Qing Jie can probably treat it, but she went out on a night hunt. Day 26, 5:41 p.m., a farm southeast of Xi'an. At the mention of Wenxing, we briefly cut to her location. She and Liu Qingyang are conferring in a cornfield, a group of farmers watching nervously from a distance. A close-up of the stalks shows a dark, creeping blight on the leaves, while the cobs look like they're melting, leaves and silk and kernels liquefying and oozing downwards. Gross. I'm going to stay away from corn for a while after this, I think. Well, Liu Qingyang says, hushed. She gestures to the plants, careful not to touch the melty corn stuff. Is this just some sort of plant thing, or is it something we can treat? No idea. Really? I thought you knew all about plants and stuff. I'm a doctor, Qingyang, not an agronomist. Day 26, 5:43 p.m., in the ruins. Back to the saga of Tingling and the curse. If he can't suppress it, Wei Wuxian decides, the only option is to transfer it. To himself. But, Lan Xingyi protests. I can handle hallucinations, Wei Wuxian says, settling his hands on Tingling's shaking leg. The curse has begun to climb his thigh. And I'll be able to hold it off for longer than he can. But, now might be a good time for you to go get your lunging bay. For the second time in 5 minutes, we watch as Lan Xingyi sprints through the watchtower. He finds Han Guansin in the kitchen, carefully pouring hot oil into a bowl.
Xingyi,
Lan Wenxi acknowledges, not turning around.
How is your spice tolerance? I find myself in need of a taste tester.
Lan Jingbei! Lan Xingyi says, and at his panicked squawk, Lan Wenxi spins around, abandoning his cooking project. It's Wei Qinbei and Aling, they... At the stone mound, the hallucinations already have Wei Wuxian in their grip. He's wandering toward the cliff edge, talking to himself in a low voice, while Tingling tries desperately to keep him away from the steep drop-off. He's still recovering from his own curse-induced hallucinations, though, not to mention being buried alive, so Wei Wuxian evades him easily. He's so close. Another step and he'll walk right off the cliff. At the last possible second, a blue leash of spiritual energy whips around Wei Wuxian's waist, yanking him back from the edge. Han Guansin to the rescue! Lan Wenxi has found a use for the not-so-boring-anymore talisman, it seems.
Wei Ying,
he says, low. Wei Wuxian struggles against the talisman rope, and after considering for a moment, Lan Wenxi uses it to tie him to a nearby tree. Then he picks up Wei Wuxian's trembling fingers and presses them between his broad palms.
Wei Ying, can you hear me? Do you understand me?
Wei Wuxian's eyes jerk open, and somehow he manages to swim up through whatever nightmare the curse is drowning him in. Lanja! He gasps. I'm okay. Don't listen to anything I say right now, okay? It's all nonsense. Nothing real. His eyes flutter closed again as he slumps into the clutch of the talisman cord.
Tiangcheng,
he whispers, back in the hallucination. He can't... If I could give him... Could you? It doesn't matter to me. It won't matter. 50%. I'll be fine. Tsin Leng, who's now crouched at the base of a tree, head between his knees, looks up at this. When I was hallucinating, I thought I was... He shakes his head, grimacing. I was reliving the worst moment of my life. The worst thing I can remember. Lan Wuxi glances at him, and then back at Wei Wuxian. And just for a moment, blink and you'll miss it, he rubs his thumb over the back of Wei Wuxian's hand. Gentle. Lan Chengbei, can you suppress the curse? Lan Xingyi asks.
Not with sufficient speed.
Lan Wenxi says, not taking his eyes off Wei Wuxian.
We would need one Daifu for that.
Smash cut to Wen Qing and Luo Qingyang, huddled behind a border at the edge of a woodland. Something is rampaging through a cornfield behind them, while Wen Qing briskly applies a sticky green elixir to a vicious scratch in Luo Qingyang's arm.
Tamada!
Luo Qingyang hisses. I hate tree demons. You ready to go back out? Wen Qing says. In the field, the tree demon unleashes an unearthly, windy howl of rage. Yeah, all right. This time, you draw it off to the north, and I'll come up from behind with the fire talisman. Together, they leap out from behind the boulder.
But there is another way to remove a curse.
Lan Wenxi materializes his guzhen and sinks gracefully to the ground, cross-legged. Behind him, Wei Wuxian struggles against the binding talisman, groaning.
It hurts, he says, his face agonized. It hurts, Wenxing. Did you tell me it would hurt?
Of course you did. I know. No, don't stop. You can't stop. The words trail off into breathless whimpers of pain, and Lan Wenxi visibly restrains himself from rising to his feet again.
Lan Chengbei, is he all right?
It is the hallucination,
Lan Wenxi says firmly. None of them are saying the obvious. If that curse mark remains for much longer, Wei Wuxian will lose his leg. If he's under its influence for too long, he'll die. Tsin Leng, who must be aware that Wei Wuxian transferred the curse mark onto his own body to save him, looks like he's going to throw up.
In order to stop it, we must appease the spirit that caused the curse.
And how do we do that? Tsin Leng demands.
I will speak with the spirit.
Lan Wenxi plucks a few short notes on the guzhen, and luminescent green spheres of spiritual energy begin to drift outwards, in time with the vibrations of the strings. In the watery dusk light, they look like jellyfish, rising towards the surface of the sea. After a moment, a few bubbles of energy float back down and pluck the notes of the tin themselves.
His name is Tiao Leng,
Lan Wenxi translates. There are a few more exchanges, with Lan Wenxi plucking the strings in a question and the spirit plucking at a response, before he speaks again.
He says he died some 500 years ago. He cannot be more exact. He was the senior disciple of the Wucheng Tao clan, half-brother of Tao Zhengzhu.
Another pause for more musical messaging. It's slower than WeChat, but it's getting the job done.
There were those in the clan who thought Tao Leng should rule.
Lan Wenxi says, slowly, when there's a break in the vibration of the strings.
He said he did not wish his brother ill, did not wish to hurt him, but there was...
A long passage of notes, with Lan Wenxi pausing to listen.
A misunderstanding. It was all a misunderstanding, he says. But his brother confronted him and sent him to man the watchtower as a punishment.
Wei Wuxian seems less frantic now. Only a few of his muttered words are audible over the eerie, disjointed melody from the guzhen. Wen Chao, he says, with a twisted grin. You think... do... worst.
He died soon after his arrival here,
Lan Wenxi continues.
He believes he was... crushed beneath something. Stones fell. The other cultivators here died too. He remembers hearing them scream as he was dying. He thinks his brother sent someone to kill him, but he does not know. He wishes to know.
And so, what? We have to figure out how he died, to appease him. Tsingling says, rising from his crouch. Or confirm that it was his brother. How the fuck are we going to do that? For a fraction of a second, a look of uncertainty passes across Lan Wenxi's face, as if he, too, does not know how they'll manage it in time.
I will ask more questions.
He says, finally. He sends more phosphorescent energy swirling into the looming dark.
He has some recollection of...
The words are cut off by an anguished howl from Wei Wuxian. He reaches frantically for the Dietze at his belt, stretching against the talisman, but it's no good. The Dietze is out of reach. Instead, he begins to whistle. A thin, wretched melody, almost atonal, and yet... There's something in it that sounds almost like the Tsin language that Lan Wenxi uses for inquiry. A call to the dead. A language that's not meant for the living. The other three freeze, watching him, until the stone mound begins to rumble, as if something, or someone, or more than one someone's, is trying to shake its way out.
Wei Ying,
Lan Wenxi says, urgently.
Wei Ying, stop.
The whistling rises higher, the ground shakes harder, and I wonder, how many corpses are there, buried in those ruins? Is Tao Ling the only one whose spirit lingers in the ruins by the cliff's edge? And maybe Lan Wenxi is wondering the same thing, because he, reluctantly, if his face is anything to go by, hits Wei Wuxian with the Lan silencing spell. The tune cuts off, a note sliced in half.
Make certain he cannot hurt himself.
Lan Wenxi says to the other two, when Wei Wuxian starts to flail against the talisman's bond again. Now, when he plucks the strings, it's urgent, almost fierce.
He recalls a great shaking before he died.
Lan Wenxi says, as the answer comes.
An explosion, perhaps. Something strong enough to knock down part of the watchtower.
What can we do with that? Tsin Ling, holding one of Wei Wuxian's arms flat against the tree, is angry now. Or scared, more likely, but it translates into a harsh anger. What does that tell us if he... He stops, looks out across the ruins. There's still enough sunlight spilling over the horizon to illuminate the stone mound, the shape of what might have been there once. Wait, did you say shaking? It wasn't an explosion. There was an earthquake here, Tsin Ling says, tripping over the words in his haste to get them out. In the 26th year of the Tia Tsing, in the year of Ding Wei, that's 470-something years ago, I think. It was a big one. The original watchtower fell. It was rebuilt later on, a bit to the... Never mind that. That's what killed him, not his brother. It was nothing to do with his brother. Before he's even done speaking, Lan Wenxi has already begun to play, even faster than before, a long passage of notes that fills the woods with hundreds of spheres of energy. After a pause, two long notes sound on the tsing.
He thanks you,
Lan Wenxi says, his voice shaking with undisguised relief.
He is content, I believe, with knowing that his brother was not responsible for his death.
The energy from inquiry disperses into the air, falling back to the ground in the fine mist. As the neon green tint fades into the soil, Lan Wenxi begins untying Wei Wuxian, tugging out the edge of his robe to make certain the curse mark is faded into his skin.
Wei Ying.
Wei Wuxian opens his eyes, blinks twice, says, Lan Jia, I told you I didn't put that drawing in the book, and pitches forward into Lan Wenxi's arms, unconscious. Day 26, 7:57 p.m. Lin Qing's little makeshift treatment room is full up. There's Wei Wuxian, awake but quiet, with Lan Wenxi sitting beside him and watching him closely. Liu Qingyang, with a minor burn on one hand from the successful battle against the tree demon. Tsin Ling, waiting for Wen Qing to check for after effects of his brief exposure to the curse mark. Lan Xingyi, telling a story of Tao Ling to the room at large. And Su Shu, still in his sweater and jeans, clutching his stomach and groaning. You went down into Xi'an, Wen Qing asks. What did you eat?
Spicy roast, Doc.
Su Shu mutters.
And pearl fish balls, and roast duck, and pumpkin and chicken, steamed wuchang fish, and...
This is the most relatable Su Shu has been during his time on the show, honestly. Stomach ache, Wen Qing diagnoses, brisk, and moves on to adjust the herbal compress in Liu Qingyang's hand. Meanwhile, Lan Wenxi is doting on Wei Wuxian. That's the only word for it. He makes Wei Wuxian drink water, adjusts his pillow, asks a series of low-voiced questions about how he's feeling, and then offers to play the Song of Clarity for him. I thought this might get the same reaction it did when they were by the campfire, but Wei Wuxian just sighs and says, "Qingqia, tell Lan Zhan that I'm a model patient and that you don't want him to interrupt your treatment plan." To which Wenqing retorts that Wei Wuxian has never once in his life been a model patient, and that Lan Wenxi's interference is very welcome if it results in Wei Wuxian getting some sleep. "I'm being bullied," Wei Wuxian moans, but he does roll over and close his eyes. Later that night, Qin Ling talks to Lan Xingyi about the hallucinations. "It was awful, because they were so realistic," he says. "It was like I was 15 again, at the hospital with my dad, begging to be allowed to see Ma and Lao Lao." "What do you think Wei Tianbe was hallucinating about?" Qin Ling hesitates. "I don't know," he says. He disappeared for a while, after the car crash and the fire. I always thought he just didn't care that much about us, that he didn't want to deal with it. But now..." He shakes his head. "I don't know." Day 27, 5:03 a.m. In the pre-dawn dark, Wei Wuxian is kneeling by the path that runs through the pine woods behind the outbuildings. He looks like he's erected a burial plaque. When Lan Wenxi appears behind him, his handful of glowing spiritual energy illuminates the name carved into the wood. Tao Ling. 500 years seems like a long time to spend wondering if your brother hates you," Wei Wuxian says, not turning around. He sounds weary, but also somehow younger than he has at any point before. "Don't you think, Lanja?" "Thank you for helping him." Lan Wenxi stares down at him with a soft expression, almost like he's forgotten that he still needs to respond. Let's just call this what it is, shall we? Lan Wenxi is gone on Wei Wuxian, totally smitten.
"I only did what anyone would have done," he says after a minute. "It was you who took a risk, taking the curse upon yourself. The hallucinations seemed..."
"They were just nightmares," Wei Wuxian interjects. "Nothing real. And I've got such a bad memory, Lan Zhan. I won't even remember what I saw by tomorrow." He scrubs a hand over his brow. "Xingyi told me you had to silence me. The whistling, I mean." "Sorry."
"No apologies are necessary."
"Sure. Yeah." When he turns and glances up at Lan Wenxi, the light catches on his face. He looks as if the entire experience, curse, hallucinations, scored him open, and he can't quite stitch the wound closed. "Lan Zhan, what's it like when you talk with the dad?" Lan Wenxi hesitates.
"You have some familiarity with the dad, I think."
Wei Wuxian laughs, soft. "Yeah, but I don't talk to them, mostly. I mean, I have, with empathy, but that's more memory, you know? Not a conversation. And the rest of the time I just command them, I guess. It's not the same. Have you ever tried a inquiry, I mean, with someone you knew?"
"Once,"
Lan Wenxi says, and there's the weight of some old heartbreak behind that single word. "And?"
"She didn't answer."
"Yeah, I guess that's how it is, isn't it? It's never the ones you want to hear." Wei Wuxian sighs, dusts off his hands, and rises to his feet. "What time is it? If you're up, I guess it must be 5. Time for me to go to bed, then."
"You have not slept,"
Lan Wenxi says.
"When Daifu said you needed rest."
"Yeah, Lan Zhan, don't you start with me. Qingxia is bad enough." He bumps a shoulder against Lan Wenxi's, and they turn to walk towards the watchtower. "I promise I'll sleep now, okay?" Day 28, 6:35 p.m. The watchtower crew, minus Su Shui, who's probably off somewhere grumping about something, are in the kitchen, putting the finishing touches on a celebratory feast. Lan Wanxi and Luo Qingyang, the cooks in the group, are doing most of the work, but Wei Wuxian is bending very intently over one particular bronze pot. "Is that..." Tinling says, coming over just as Wei Wuxian starts to ladle soup into bowls. "Your mother's famous soup. I miss it, now we don't live in the same city. Mine's nowhere near as good, but..." He shrugs. "It's enough to bring back the memory, at least." Tinling tries a spoonful and shrugs. "You're right, it's not as good." He takes the bowl, though, and then turns back. "Tiu Tiu, I... sorry, and thank you." Somehow I think he's talking about something other than the soup. There's one more food surprise when everyone sits down to dinner. Lan Wanxi puts a bowl of bright red oil down beside Wei Wuxian. "Lan Jia, is this chili oil?" Wei Wuxian says, delighted. Late entry to the Cultivation World drinking game. Take a swig every time Lan Wanxi says, "Did you make this for me?" Too much? Maybe downgrade it to a sip. "Ah, Lan Jia, I can't believe you!" Wei Wuxian dumps two enormous spoonfuls of the oil into his bowl and sighs happily at the first bite. His smile for Lan Wanxi is so bright I feel like I need sunglasses to look at it. "This is the best! Lan Jia, you're the best!" Day 28, 8:15 p.m. Lan Wanxi is in his room, playing a romantic sounding ballad on his gutsen, when Luo Qingyang happens to walk by. "That's lovely," she says. "What's it called?" Lan Wanxi blushes. It's not just his ears this time, his entire face goes red, and says,
It is private."
And that's a wrap on episode 3. Please send me all your best guesses as to what embarrassing name Lan Wanxi has given the song he's written about his crush. You all know that's what it was. It had real love confession energy. And next week, I'll share the best ones. Episode 4, The Single Log Bridge. To the person who messaged me to suggest that Lan Wanxi's song might be called Wuxi or Wangxian, I just have to say, I like your style. The thought of Han Guanzhen naming a song by mashing up his name with the name of his crush, that's delicious. Unlikely, but delicious. Now, on to the episode, where many questions remain to be answered. Will the unresolved sexual tension be resolved? Will the mystery of Wei Wuxian's cultivation be revealed? Can anything top the adrenaline rush of the race to appease the spirit of Tao Ling? And will Su Shu continue to be the worst? Day 32, 9:24 p.m. The episode opens by giving us the answer to that last question. Su Shu is dropping hints that he's discovered something of interest about one of his fellow cultivators. "When I was in Xi'an..." I'm not sure why he's acting so insufferably smug about the fact that he broke the show's rules and went down into the city. "I did a little research, and I found out a few things." He taps the side of his nose knowingly. Behind him, snow flutters softly past the window, heralding the arrival of winter at the watchtower. "I don't want to say too much until I'm certain, but I should know very soon." "Well, I don't like the sound of that one bit." Day 33, 2:52 p.m. Wei Wuxian has been giving Lan Xingyi and Luo Qingyang regular archery lessons in the courtyard, with Tsin Ling, who insists he already knows how to shoot, thank you very much, lingering off to one side while taking mental notes about everything Wei Wuxian says. At every lesson, whenever Lan Wanxi walks through, Lan Xingyi says, "Lan Jingbei, do you want to learn to shoot?" And every time, Lan Wanxi says,
"I know how to shoot, Xingyi,"
and continues on his way. I just feel like there's something there with Lan Xingbei and Wei Qiangbei. Lan Xingyi says, in a brief interview. He looks frustrated. "They're the best CP, you know? Because they're both amazing, and Lan Xingbei is so interested in everything Wei Qianbei says, and Wei Qianbei seems like he actually relaxes when he's talking to Lan Xingbei, right? So, you know, if they just a little nudge in the right direction..." Wen Qing's opinion of this idea is eye-roll, but she does begrudgingly say that he'd be a good couple, if Wei Wuxian could get his head out of his ass long enough to see that Lan Wanxi likes him. Tsin Ling does not agree. He secretly does agree. "Whatever. I mean, I suppose Lan Qingbei is probably a good enough match for my Tiu Tiu, but there's nothing there. Probably. whatever. On this particular afternoon, with three cultivators shooting in the snow-covered courtyard, Lan Xingyi tries a different tactic. Lan Jingbei, Wei Qianbei's been teaching us how to shoot two arrows at once. Do you think you could hit both targets in one shot? Lan Wenxi says. He's already drifting across the courtyard in Wei Wuxian's direction, like his body was just looking for an excuse to move towards him. Care to demonstrate, Lan Zheng? Wei Wuxian says, a light flaring in his eyes. Lan Xingyi, realizing that he's hit his mark, hustles Luo Qingyang and a protesting Qing Ling out of the courtyard, just so as to give this archery flirtation room to unfold. I spot Lan Xingyi's head poking out behind the kitchen door to watch, though. To the eternal gratitude of the persimmon tree, Wei Wuxian has set up two wooden targets, thereby preserving the golden fruit decorating the bare branches of the tree. Lan Wenxi, wintry perfection in his ice-blue robes, accepts a bow from Wei Wuxian and calmly sinks two arrows into the center of the concentric rings. Not bad, Wei Wuxian says, and then takes two arrows of his own, and, without taking his eyes off Lan Wenxi, which means he isn't looking at the targets at all, shoots his shot, splitting both of Lan Wenxi's arrows in half. But you've still got a few things to learn, Lan Zhe.
Oh, and what would you like to teach me, Wei Ying?
Lan Wenxi responds, there is no mistaking the invitation there, even if Lan Wenxi keeps his tone even and his face impassive. Wei Wuxian, never one to back down from a challenge, comes up behind Lan Wenxi and begins to carefully adjust his posture. His hands are in Lan Wenxi's arms and hips and wrists, while he murmurs something too low for the cameras to pick up.
This is correct, then.
Lan Wenxi says, shifting his stance back slightly, so that Wei Wuxian is almost draped over him.
Yeah, Wei Wuxian says, sounding a little dazed. Yeah, Lan Zhe, that's pretty good. I mean, yeah, it's all a matter of proper form, you know?
Lan Wenxi turns his head to stare down at Wei Ying, standing just behind his shoulder. If he shifts forward a feather's width, their lips will touch.
I see,
he says, in a low voice.
Perhaps you could demonstrate what you mean by proper form, Wei Ying.
That's the most formal invitation to kiss I've ever heard, and also it is working, if Wei Wuxian's face is anything to go by.
Lan Zhe, he murmurs, just as someone off-screen says,
maybe you could return the favor by teaching him how to fight with a sword, Lan Laoshi.
With a self-satisfied little chuckle, and what the fuck, Susha? Who invited you to this courtyard party? I called it in episode one, and here he is, living up to that prediction by being the worst.
Wei Wuxian jerks back, almost stumbling in the snow in his haste to get away.
I think you've got it, Lan Zhe, he mumbles, while Lan Wenxi glares an unrepentant Susha.
You've got the idea. It's cold, though, so probably we should head in. I'll leave first.
Rapid fire reactions to that. I hate that guy, Lan Xingyi says. Susha is cattily pleased with himself.
He'll find out the truth soon enough, he says,
and I don't know if he means Lan Wenxi or Wei Wuxian, but either way, it's ominous.
Last is Wei Wuxian himself, staring bleakly into the camera. He's Lan Wenxi, right? He says. And I'm the Grand Master of Demonic Cultivation.
Day 35, 7:03 a.m. Han Quansin's back in the library, reviewing another set of old texts. After an interview clip where he explains that he has indeed been working this whole time to catalog and preserve the library, he unrolls a scroll and then jerks back, shocked at whatever he finds inside. In the next shot, he's showing the scroll to Wen Qing while she eats her morning bao.
In your medical opinion,
he says, Lan Wenxi is being awful careful not to reveal the contents of this mysterious scroll to the camera.
Would this be possible?
She looks at it, then up at Lan Wenxi, sharp, before looking away. Yes.
And the odds of success?
50%. Better, perhaps, if you had a very talented physician. Lan Wenxi's face does something that's halfway between dawning understanding and pure devastation.
And would it be painful?
She hesitates, then nods. If you're going to do this, hypothetically, of course, you couldn't use anesthesia. When Lan Wenxi walks away, he tucks the scroll into his Tiankun pocket, as if he's decided not to catalog that one. Day 36, 11:55 a.m. A message talisman arrives from Lujian, a town to the south of Yichang. Fierce corpses rising at ancient battlefield, it reads. If not stopped, they will overrun local villages. Liu Qingyang, who like Lin Xing did some research before arriving on the show, Mian Mian wanted to know, she explains, brings out a map and points to the location of the Battle of Yiling, also known as the Burial Mounds. When Wei Wuxian sees the location on the map, he goes pale and sits down heavily on a nearby stool. What's wrong with you? Wen Qing asks, putting two fingers to his Yingtang point. Nothing, he mutters, brushing her off. Nothing, it's just, I've been there before.
There?
Su Shua says. He scrunches his face up into a judgmental little scowl.
An old mass grave? Why were you there?
Vacation, Wei Wuxian snaps. I can send you some brochures if you want. I think you'd love the blood pool. The journey is a long one, and there seems to be some urgency, so after a bit of heated discussion, Wei Wuxian reluctantly agrees to co-ride with Lan Wenxi and Bichun, his sword. Xiaopingguo is not fast enough, apparently, Wei Wuxian laments. Soon after the group launches, snow begins to fall. Flurries at first, then thick and heavy, swirling around the cultivators. Visibility is so low that a shot of Lan Wenxi and Wei Wuxian slicing through the air makes it look like they're all alone in the sky. Then, when the wind picks up, Lan Wenxi slides one arm around Wei Wuxian's waist. I'm fine, Lan Zhan, Wei Wuxian huffs. I can keep my balance. Doesn't seem like his reluctance to ride a sword arises from any issues with height.
If you were to fall in this weather, I would not be able to see you in order to catch you,
Lan Wenxi says, implacable. Wei Wuxian doesn't complain again, even as Lan Wenxi draws him closer. A few hours later, a dark splotch appears on the horizon. It's the burial mounds, the resentful energy strong enough that it shows as a slowly spreading ink stain across the blizzard sky. Closer in, it resolves into a landscape of sharp stone needles and dead trees.
You said you have been here before,
Lan Wenxi asks. Yeah, it's a long story. Wei Wuxian doesn't give any details, leaving us to guess how he might have ended up hanging out at the site of the Battle of Yiling. Night hunt gone wrong? Searching for ancient cultivation treasure? Thrown into the burial mounds as part of some intersect strife? It's not the sort of place you want to spend a lot of time. If there are fierce corpses coming out of there, well, sounds like just another winter in the burial mounds to me. Lan Wenxi's arm visibly tightens around Wei Wuxian, as if he can protect him from whatever terrible things he faced in the past.
Wei Ying, the other day, in the courtyard.
Lan Jia, Wei Wuxian interjects, shifting away. It's not... I mean, look, I have my reasons for walking the single log bridge instead of the broad, crowded avenue, but I don't want anyone else to have to walk that path. It seems like an apology of sorts, for running away from their almost kiss.
And do others have no say in what path they walk?
Lan Wenxi asks. He may be framing it in the hypothetical, but his meaning's clear enough, both in the words and the intensity of his gaze. In the falling snow, we can't quite make out Wei Wuxian's face, but I can imagine the expression he's making. Ah, yeah, Lan Jia, you don't understand, he says softly. I'm not going to change my mind about my cultivation. It's not a phase. I'm not going to pick up my sword and be the model cultivator people want to see. I'm unfixable, okay? And your reputation... Lan Wenxi opens his mouth to respond, but he doesn't get a chance. His words are drowned out by a loud roar. When the camera pans down, it shows, to steal a phrase from Lan Xingyi, an absolute fuckton of fierce corpses. Hundreds, at least, maybe more, jammed into the narrow paths between the fang-like rocks. Looks like our cultivator is about to face their biggest challenge yet. Day 36, 4:58 p.m.
Somehow, in the chaos of battle, the cultivators had been separated into two groups. Team Competence Porn and Team Two Juniors, a demonic cultivator, and that one guy whose personality is worse than getting dog shit on the bottom of your shoe. That's unwieldy. Let's go with Team Shut Up, Susha. Lin Wenxi, Wen Qing, and Luo Qingyang are ably slashing and guchin-bashing their way through a clearing filled with fierce corpses, managing to work in tandem with only a few words of consultation. Lin Wenxi swaps out his guzin for bichin at one point, and swirls gracefully between the corpses, the white sweep of his sleeves writing invisible calligraphy in the snow-filled air. Team Competent seems to be making good use of Wei Wuxian's talismans, too. At one point, Wen Qing freezes a whole batch of corpses, then uses a strategically aimed explosion talisman to push them straight into Luo Qingyang and Wei Wuxian's swords.
"Where are the others?"
Lan Wenxi asks, stirring a slight breather in the fight. It seems like he was fighting solo for a bit before he met up with the two women. "Wei Wuxian went with the juniors," Wen Qing says. "It's fine. He won't let them get hurt."
"And Susha?"
"Haven't seen him since we got here," Liu Qingyang says, shrugging. "He's probably holed up somewhere away from the fight, so he can show up at the end and make up something about taking care of half the fierce corpses by himself." In fact, Susha is with Wei Wuxian, Xin Ling, and Lan Xingyi, his guzin out and blaring sound of vanquish. It doesn't sound quite as good as it does when Lan Wenxi plays it. There's something kind of off about the chords, but at least he's trying. Which is more than both I and Luo Qingyang were expecting, so I'll overlook the dramatic "I'm in a rock band" gestures he's using while he plays the battle song. Nearby, Xin Ling and Lan Xingyi are mopping up the corpses left by Wei Wuxian, who is, finally, showing what he can do with the Ditze. His frenetic, maddening song has most of the corpses under his control. They turn to fight one another, or bare their throats for Lan Xingyi and Xin Ling's blades, and in some cases simply drop to the ground, transformed from fierce corpse to just a corpse. The problem is, though, that there are too many of them, and not enough Wei Wuxian. Whenever he gets distracted by making sure the two juniors aren't overwhelmed, some of the corpses escape the power of his song, and every time he finishes clearing out one wave, there's the roar of another group approaching. "They're seals, usually, that keep the corpses in here suppressed," he mutters as he holds Qin Xing, that's the Ditze, at the ready. "But the seals are easy to break, even accidentally, and once you disturb one, they all end up broken. Don't ask me how I know." Just before the next set of fierce corpses can make their stiff-kneed way through the gap in the rocks where Team Shut Up Susha is fighting, Xin Ling coughs and spits out a mouthful of blood. A moment later, Lan Xingyi follows suit. "What the hell?" Lan Xingyi says, wiping his mouth with the back of his hand. "My spiritual energy is gone." "Mine too," Xin Ling says. The sword in his hand droops, and he looks both angry and extremely nervous. Susha seems to be fine. More than fine, actually. He looks extremely pleased about something, and Wei Wuxian hasn't coughed anything up either. He doesn't waste any time discussing the whys or hows of this mysterious situation, though. He just directs the other three to follow a path between the rocks. "There's a big cave there, with a repelling array," he says. "I'll hold them off and follow after you." Susha looks like he might argue about this for some reason, but Xin Ling and Lan Xingyi pull him along, slipping between the rocks and out of sight. When they're safely away, Wei Wuxian stops his song and turns to run, firing off the purple lotus signal flare as he does. I feel like he wouldn't have done it if it was just him in trouble. Wei Wuxian doesn't seem like the type to ask for help for himself, but Xin Ling and Lan Xingyi are a different story. I doubt he wants to explain to his Xietia how her son got swarmed by fierce corpses. The cave in question isn't just a bare hole in the ground. It was inhabited at some point, with the remains of a straw bedroll in one corner and strings of talismans that looked like they were inked in blood dangling from the walls. And I thought the blood pool was an invention of Wei Wuxian's, but the camera catches a glimpse of a pool near the back filled with something too dark to be water. It's understandable that Wei Wuxian looks a little ill as he enters the cave. Whatever reason he was here, it's definitely not the sort of place you look forward to revisiting. He quickly activates the array that's etched in the stone floor, and has the other three sit in the center. "They won't be able to come in now," he says. "How are you feeling?" "Still drained," Lan Xingyi says, panicky. "Wei Qianbei, do you think it's permanent?"
"I'm not sure, Xingyi. I've never seen anything like it. Did you two eat anything weird, or drink the water in the burial mounds?"
Both shake their heads, and Wei Wuxian looks up at Susha, who doesn't bother to drop the smug expression.
you aren't affected, Wei Wuxian says. Why?
Neither are you,
Su Xie says, wiggling his eyebrows in what I think is meant to be a gotcha type of expression.
I might ask you the same thing, Wei Wuxian.
Lan Wenxi flies into the cave on Bichun, dropping onto the array with a hasty dismount. Because this is Han Guanzhen we're talking about, it's all still extremely elegant.
Wei Ying, we saw the signal flare,
he says.
Is everything all right?
Lan Qingbei, our spiritual energy is gone! Lan Xingyi yells, pointing to the dried blood in his lips. There's a pause while Lan Wanxi stares at Lan Xingyi and Xin Ling, and then slowly, slowly, turns to stare at Su Xie.
The collection of turmoil,
he says in a low voice, whatever that means. Su Xie meets his eyes, unblinking.
Xingyi, was Su Xie playing Song of Vanquish?
Yes?
Did he play it properly?
Lan Xingyi shakes his head. Well, not so much, really. I mean, I didn't say anything because there's no polite way to say, dude, your guzheng playing sucks. No offense, Su Xiangsheng, but it was like, bum bum da da dum. He cuts off partway through his recreation of the battle song. Wait, Lan Qingbei, are you saying that Su Xiangsheng did this to us? Su Xie doesn't deny it. In fact, he seems happy that Lan Wenxi has discovered his treachery.
I was testing a theory,
he says, unbearably self-righteous. He points at Wei Wuxian, voice rising triumphantly.
And I was right. The spell to drain spiritual energy doesn't work on him. It doesn't work on him because he doesn't...
Then the silencing spell hits him.
You are not qualified to talk about him,
Lan Wenxi says, icy. Behind him, Wei Wuxian's jaw is on the ground. I mean, it's literally on the ground, because as soon as Su Xie started to speak, Wei Wuxian was leaping for him, as if he might get there in time to clap a hand over his mouth. He rolls onto his back and stares up at Lan Wenxi. Lan Jia, he says, trying for a lighthearted tone, as if this is a joke. It's obviously not a joke. Nothing has ever been less of a joke to Wei Wuxian than the next thing he says. Don't you want to know? Don't you want to know what makes someone start cultivating on the ghostly path? Lan Wenxi puts out a hand and gently lifts Wei Wuxian to his feet.
I would not wish to find out like this, Wei Ying,
he says.
And in any event, I already know.
You know? In the background of this shot, the very angry juniors have dragged Su Xie off to the side of the array and tied him up with the minding talisman before turning back to watch the unfolding drama.
Did Wen Cheng tell you?
No. I put the pieces together for myself.
Oh, I... Well...
Wei Wuxian ducks his head, like he feels too exposed to meet Lan Wenxi's eye.
Well, okay. I guess we should figure out what to do about these fierce corpses, huh?
Wei Ying.
Lan Wenxi puts a hand on Wei Wuxian's shoulder, and then, when Wei Wuxian doesn't step away, slides the hand up to cradle his cheek.
It doesn't matter to me that you cultivate on the ghostly path. You are a good man and a good cultivator. You do not need to follow an orthodox path to do good.
He pauses and looks at Wei Wuxian with the fondest, softest gaze I've ever seen.
Wei Wuxian, I like you. I like you so very much, and I want to...
Lan Jia, no, you can't. Wei Wuxian says, even as his own hand steals up to cover Lan Wanxi's, their unshed tears shimmering in the corners of his eyes. Look at him. He gestures to Su Xie, quivering with silent irritation at the edge of the array. He cares. Everyone cares. The entire cultivation world cares. You think I don't know what they say about me? About the grandmaster of demonic cultivation? Of course it matters. You're Ilan of Gusulan, a model cultivator. You've got a spotless reputation. Everyone looks up to you. You can't throw all that away for... Well, you can't, Lan Jia. And then, oh my god, Lan Wenxi says,
Wei Ying, listen to me. I would rather walk a single log bridge with you than the broadest road without.
Oh, Lan Jia.
And then they're kissing. Oh my god. Oh my god. Lan Wenxi has backed Wei Wuxian up against the wall of the cave and is kissing him ferociously. I almost can't watch because it's such a personal moment, but also I am definitely watching. Finally, Lan Xingyi says, doing a jaunty little celebratory dance. Wen Xinlin gives him a skeptical glance. He shrugs. What? I'm excited. They finally got together. I think Lan Xingyi and I might be kindred spirits. Call me, Xingyi. Meanwhile, Su Shi is boggling at this, clearly stricken by how badly his plan has backfired. Just then, Wen Qing and Luo Qingyang burst into the cave, looking a little more hairy than the last time we saw them. So we've got... Luo Qingyang starts to say, but stops when she spots Wei Wuxian and Lan Wenxi kissing. The silenced Su Shi. Turns out that Lan Wenxi was on Team Shut Up Su Shi all along. And the boggling juniors.
I guess we missed something,
she says dryly.
We've still got hundreds of fierce corpses out there, so maybe you could postpone the makeout session,
Wen Qing adds. Wei Wuxian steps away from Lan Wenxi with a laugh. It's obvious that he's gloriously, ebulliently happy, and even the presence of an overwhelming number of fierce corpses can't bring him down, and immediately starts stripping off his outer robes.
Maybe not the time for that either,
Wen Qing says, raising one eyebrow, but he just shakes his head at her.
Very funny, Qingxia.
He bites the edge of his thumb and uses the resulting blood to sketch out a spirit attraction talisman on the white front of his innermost robes. The fierce corpses will focus on me, he says, so you two can take the juniors out. And him, I guess. Pointing to Su Shi. Then I'll draw them all into the cave.
Wei Qianbei! Lan Xingyi protests. That's so risky!
Lan Zhang can protect me, right? He smiles back at Lan Wenxi. And then, the shot cuts away, and now we hear Wei Wuxian in voiceover as the things he's describing come to pass. Wen Qing and Luo Qingyang leading the two juniors and a humiliated Su Shi out as corpses descend single-mindedly on Wei Wuxian, while he uses the Ditze to keep them from getting too close, and Lan Wenxi makes quick work of those that slip through. Once they're all in, Lan Zha and I will slip out the back way. The back way turns out to be a narrow crack in the rock, half the width of a man, the Wei Wuxian pries open with resentful energy so it's just wide enough to slip through. With the fierce corpses stuck in there, it's simple. I'll just make the cave go. Standing on a rock pinnacle away from the back exit, Wei Wuxian lifts one hand in the air and brings his fingers together. Boom. The ground rumbles, and Wen Qing, Luo Qingyang, and the other three watch from a vantage point on the other side of the burial mound as the cavern slowly implodes, the rock roof collapsing inwards with a resounding crash. I don't think those corpses are going anywhere soon.
Well, that was impressive,
Wen Qing says, then glares at Lan Xingyi and Xing Ling. Don't tell him I said that. Day 39, 5:33 p.m. So, after all of that, we didn't find out Wei Wuxian's secret. Lan Wenxi knows, sure, but we don't. But I'm okay with that, because, first, look, Wei Wuxian clearly didn't want anyone to know, or at least he didn't want it announced to the world on Mango TV. Second, Su Shi clearly did want it revealed, as dramatically as possible, and anything that thwarts Su Shi is a good thing. And, well, not to get all sentimental on you, my beloved readers, although why would you be reading an Ouyang Zijin recap if you wanted to avoid sentiment? But what we actually got was way better than solving a mystery. Wei Wuxian wanted something very badly. If the way he stared up at Lan Wenxi in that cave was any indication, extremely badly. And he thought he wasn't allowed to have it. He thought there was something about him, something he couldn't change, that made it impossible. Something that made him unworthy. And then Lan Wenxi just came right out and told him, "You're enough. To me, being with you is worth standing up against the opinion of the entire cultivation world." Honestly, though, not the entire cultivation world. After watching this show, I think Wei Wuxian is fantastic, and if you don't agree, I don't know what's wrong with you. Anyway, wiping away a tear, I just think that's special. Okay, I hear all you saying, "The show is still happening, Zijin," which is true. The cultivators have returned to the Watchtower, and with just a few days remaining to film, they're down to six on the crew. Su Shi has been booted back to modern life, the trickery with Sound of Vanquish sufficient to have him unceremoniously removed from the show. Good riddance, Xinling spits. That guy was the worst. It's a sentiment that seems to be shared by the others, who all look to be having more fun now that Su Shi is gone. Wei Wuxian and Lan Wanxi in particular seem to be having a lot of fun, if you know what I mean. Lan Wanxi is already planning to move to Wuhan. Lan Xingyi whispers to the camera. He's in the library. While in the background of the shot, Wei Wuxian is sitting in Lan Wanxi's lap while they consult a book on talisman design. They're kissing. It's great! I'm so happy for them! Wen Qing is not quite so happy with this turn of events. They've broken the wooden bathtub, she says, exasperated. Twice! The water flooded everywhere, and then Wei Wuxian's "this'll dry things right up" talisman lit the room on fire. Day 41, 6:38 p.m. The final night at the watchtower brings another feast. Wei Wuxian convinces Lan Wanxi to try the chili oil. You did such a good job making it, Lan Jia, and it's not that spicy. Which makes Lan Wanxi go as red as the oil. Having tested his palate once, Lan Wanxi then decides to try some of Wei Wuxian's Emperor's Smile. No exaggeration, one sip has him passed out face down on the table. Lan Jia, oh my god, no wonder he doesn't drink, Wei Wuxian says, as Lan Xingyi explains that the Cloud Recess's 3,000 rules include no alcohol, which means tolerance is low among its graduates. Suddenly, Lan Wanxi pops back up, fully awake, and rushes out into the courtyard. Lan Jia, Wei Wuxian yells, running after him. Where are you going? When everyone gets outside, they find Lan Wanxi with Bichen out, carving Lan Wanxi was here into one of the wooden posts at the entrance to the watchtower kitchen. Drunk Lan Wanxi doesn't go where the chaos is. He is the chaos. The rest of the crew stares in shock as Lan Wanxi studies his handiwork with drunken appreciation. Then, yeah, he was, Lan Xingyi yells, and everyone gets in on it. Wen Qing was here, Luo Qingyang was here, Qin Ling was here, Lan Xingyi was here, and last but not least, Wei Wuxian was here. A fitting memorial to a great season, I say. Day 42, 9:40 a.m. As each cultivator leaves the watchtower, they talk about their takeaways from the last 6 weeks. I can definitely draw a raise on my own now, Lan Xingyi says, and some awesome talismans. Shifu's not going to believe it. Qin Ling, who you'll recall didn't give a reason for coming on the show, also declines to talk about what he's learned from his time at the Watchtower. He does shrug and say, there are some good people here, though, and we see him arranging to come to Shanghai and stay with Lan Xingyi in a couple weeks' time, and, gasp, hugging Wei Wuxian. You'll come and visit soon, he asks, and Wei Wuxian grins and scruffs his hair. Couldn't stop me, Aling. People say a lot of things about him, Qin Ling says in his final interview. And some of it's true, I guess. But those people can shut up, okay? That's my Tzu they're talking about. Wen Qing is taking an entire wooden chest packed with elixirs and potions she made while at the watchtower back with her to Chongqing, while Luo Xingyang, who spends an hour trying to find her modern clothes, before realizing that they're in the Changkun pocket inside my Changkun bag, which seems like a good design element, but anything that goes in there gets totally lost, seems satisfied that she did what she set out to do. I've got stories coming out of this to entertain Mian Mian for years, she says, and if I can give my opinion, I'd say that she more than showed that unaffiliated cultivators can kick butt. Last to leave are Lan Wanxi and Wei Wuxian. They pause at the gate and look back at the watchtower, Wei Wuxian's head on Lan Wanxi's shoulder, hands intertwined. Lan Wanxi is now dressed in a gorgeous powder blue wool coat over a white silk tunic, with Wei Wuxian back in his cute YJAS hoodie and ripped jeans. Well, Wei Wuxian says, I definitely gave some advertising to YJAS. I don't know if Aunt Yu will be happy about it, though. What about you, Lan Jia? Did you get what you wanted out of this? Lan Wanxi looks down at Wei Wuxian and smiles. He actually smiles. It's beautiful. No, he says. I found something better. Lan Jia, you can't say stuff like that. My heart. And then, while they're kissing, credits roll. This has been Ouyang Zijin, your trusty recapper, for what I think we can all agree was objectively the best ever season of The Cultivation World. I don't think I'll be getting over Wangsheng anytime soon, so join me and Weibo to chat about them, and see you all next season. The end. Thanks for listening.